This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Weekend confirmed time, everybody. My name is Garnet Lee. It's a Friday morning, so we're doing the morning Zoo Crew style show.
Yeah.
Excited about that.
More cowbell.
More.
Brooklyn. Man in the box.
Can we get a cowbell in here, please? Oh, she does not have one in here. Do you have it? Can you drop a sound drop of it for a cowbell? There's your assignment. Get us a cowbell drop on the board in the next few minutes. Oh, I could get one on that. You're right. I could get one on the iPad. I'll put a bird on it in the meantime. That's for Brooklyn. Just for Brooklyn. We have an announcement about Brooklyn coming.
She's leaving.
I know.
Now
you don't.
Wow. Way to blow the announcement.
I didn't know it was going to be an announcement.
But we have one more coming from her, and that'll be the big GDC show that we're recording next week. Are you in for that?
Absolutely, I'm in for that.
I don't know. I can't get it with it.
No.
That's Mr. Jeff Cannata right there to my left.
With two N's and one T, of course, at Jeff Cannata on Twitter.
Follow him. Follow everybody on Twitter. I hear it's getting popular.
The Twitter?
Yeah.
It's because they put a bird on it.
Hey!
That was pretty well played.
That's why you go to see him at the Comedy Stop or wherever else he goes.
The Comedy
at
Stop.
The corner on Santa Monica.
When people are saying, comedy, thing. Stop!
Well, I was going to say the Comedy Store.
Yeah, but that's a place.
That's a place. But I thought, oh, I wonder if he's actually ever been at the Comedy Store.
I'll be at the UCB Theater in LA on Saturday, March 24th.
With? Hey,
I'll be there too.
No way.
Yeah.
With some special guests. Tickets
are now
available.
Is that why you guys are dressing the same today?
Dude,
what do you mean?
It's a whole thing.
We're just mirroring. We're yes-anding one another. And
seriously, come see it. It's called Double Jump. It's going to be amazing.
It will
be.
Awesome.
I like that. It's a good name, Double Jump. So that's Christian Spicer right there. And then made it over the hill this morning, James Stevenson from Insomniac.
Yeah, that was terrifying.
40 years old today?
No.
Oh, not that.
No. I drove over the 405, which is Satan's freeway. So
yeah, it basically makes you feel like you're 40 years old.
Yeah.
No, I do agree with you that it is that, yeah, it lives up to its reputation.
So 9 a.m. weekend confirms are not very pleasant.
we don't do them that often.
I know. And I got up super early, came over the hill, and then I sat and ate chicken fried steak and drank coffee and surfed Wi-Fi. So
did you really have chicken fried steak this morning?
I had chicken fried steak this morning. I am powered up and ready to rock and roll.
That does sound awesome.
America.
Where'd you go?
Oh, it's just Denny's. It was terrible.
There's this place over
better than sitting in traffic.
There's this place over in El Segundo.
That's my wallet in El Segundo.
Called Wendy's. That makes the most amazing. It's not.
Have you guys heard of this place? This adorable redheaded girl with pigtails. It's amazing.
That's the only
Square
one.
Square burgers. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
The
Square.
Old guy who used to run it. He was so nice. Then he died. Wow.
No, this is a real cafe. It's Wendy's Cafe.
The problem is trying to find something delicious and southern and fried in Santa Monica, watch the waistline.
Exist.
No, exactly. So it was dead. I literally did internet searches for like an hour trying to find a good chicken fried steak in Santa Monica. I'm just going to go to Denny's, whatever.
The internet that's like, dude, just go to Denny's.
Yeah.
All right, so now that we finished the SoCal morning breakfast report, we'll move on to games. We're going to talk about Vita today. I will, I do not hate the Vita. I'm kind of tired.
Yes, you do.
I do not hate the
internet
Vita.
Says you do.
The internet says I hate the Vita because I happen to point out some things it could do better. I think there are things that lots of systems could do better. I think there are things the PlayStation 3 could do better. Hey,
why do you hate the PlayStation 3?
I don't hate the
You just hate Sony
3.
Products now. First the Vita, now the PS3.
Bias.
Man.
Sounds like bias.
Did you guys see the rumor this week that, you know, of course, the rumors are flying all over the place with the impending release information on new consoles about the latest rumor for the PlayStation, the next PlayStation, that it would be everything on one die and it would all be done by AMD and that they'd abandon the cell architecture?
That sounds like a interesting rumor.
Well, it is a rumor, but I mean, I think it's high. It makes some sense. Sure.
I mean, cell architecture, I feel like, was more of a bullet point for the console than it has been an actual plus, having obviously never developed for the console. But I mean, it was like this thing, and AMD does good. They do good stuff.
And obviously, if you follow the tech industry at all, that's where things are trending. That's what Tim Sweeney is talking about, and the idea of going to that to that everything on one die also gives them a form factor advantage. So they could bring it down as manufacturing, potential manufacturing efficiencies that wind up down the road for it. And going to a more standard sort of programming interface for them would definitely behoove them for developer support. Definitely.
Have you guys noticed how some games now are getting announced for PC and current gen consoles, or high-end consoles, I think has been the tagline for games where they're not saying PS4 or the next Xbox or whatever, but it's coming soon for PC and high-end consoles.
Yeah, they expect that flexibility to happen.
So, I mean, I think that while obviously there's porting between consoles and PC already, I think a more common architecture makes things simpler for those companies.
Yeah, I think that for as much as the cell architecture gave the PS3 a on-paper hardware advantage, I mean, I guess it's more than on paper. It does have a hardware advantage.
But it's harder to deal with.
And
you have to work for it specifically. And
yeah.
We were able to take advantage of that being PS3 exclusive. And, you know, we put a lot of resources into it. But, you know, having to redo a lot of things that you know you're doing in terms of, like, how you parallel process stuff takes a lot of effort and a lot of energy. And if you're just trying to put out a PC, Xbox 360 game, games that port really well to each other, and then port that to PS3, that became a harder issue. It's easier to go. And you saw, like, I think EA and a lot of other companies move PS3 to their lead platform, develop it there first, and bring it over. It was a lot easier going that direction than the other. And so you saw that in the early part of this life cycle, where a lot of the PS3 ports were just not as good as the Xbox 360 and PC ports because people didn't have their head around the cell yet. And then that also gave the first-party games a huge advantage because they were developed with it specifically in mind. And so, like, our early games took huge advantage of that. And I think you know, no one else was competing with, you know, the Insomniac, Naughty Dog, the Ninja Theory. Like, all those early, like, Sony published games
were head and shoulders above everything
else that was on the platform at the time.
Without a doubt.
But wasn't the promise of the cell system that your TV was going to have a chip and your toaster?
Well, I thought it was that Jennifer Lopez was going to be a good actress. That was the promise
of the cell.
And Tar Sim. But no, weren't they all supposed to, like, work together in unison and
so that's the other thing.
Supercomputer?
That's the other part of this rumor that starts to click for me is that I think that in the era of R&D for the cell, which was a few years ago, Sony was riding high in a much different financial and tech space than they are today, where they're trying to, you know, shore up their core business with televisions, consolidate into things that make money for them. And I don't see them anymore in this mode of, like, we're going to put cells in everything.
But they didn't even – that never happened, right? That promise never was realized, or that – goal was never really even
attempted. Was there a couple things the cell was? I don't even know. Like, I don't know. I thought there was a couple other consumer electronics that ended up having cells, but like I said, not nearly what I think they were originally kind of the original marketing.
It wasn't a good selling point. Guys, who's with me?
Well, I mean, and the thing about the cell is a killer chip. Like, it's still super powerful. But,
oh, absolutely.
Like I said, it didn't ever go kind of, it never really took off, I think, like you said, where they were going to have it in every single consumer electronics and they'd all network with each other. And although you did see some of those applications like folding at home and those other things.
Right.
I mean, their productivity spiked through the roof when they networked all the cells together and were using them for that sort of stuff. So, it still is a super powerful chip and had a lot of interesting abilities. But like I said, it never maybe was fully exploited in the way that they originally had hoped.
So we've got a lot of other stuff coming up. We got some great games to talk about. We got SSX to talk about. I want to talk some about binary domain. But since we're already into talking a little bit about hardware, let's just kind of move right into talking about the Vita Zone.
Oh.
You guys, I think it's funny. This week, I didn't bring my Vita, and all three of you brought your Vitas.
Yeah.
So yesterday, by the way, the reason I was not here yesterday and we had to do this on a Friday morning is Microsoft had a big showcase up in San Francisco, and we'll be able to relay some of the stuff that was shown there next week.
I didn't hear the quiet part. What was the quiet part?
I just was...
You just cleared your throat or something?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And I was sitting in the terminal there at LAX on a delay, because, of course, San Francisco was rainy and wet, and I tweeted about this, but it was really funny. There's this couple sitting across from me, and it's this dude and his wife, and he's, like, flipping through, I think it was Official PlayStation Magazine, and he, like, stops on this page, and he shows it to her. He goes, "It's the Vita. I need one of those." She looks at him and goes, "A what?" And he goes, It's like my PSP, but it's a Vita." She's like, "Why do you need that? You've got a PSP." He says, "Because it's got touchscreen." She just looks at him and goes, "So?" She's like holding her iPhone in her hand. She's like, "So?" And I thought that was a funny exchange just because it just really registered for me how much people just have sort of become accustomed to touchscreen now. It's like, of course it has a touchscreen. What's the big deal about that? His next point, and this is something I think, Jeff, you'll agree with because it's something you wanted, and I think it's sad because he's obviously at least one of their core market consumers, doesn't completely get this. He said, well, you know what's really cool about it is I'll be able to take my PS3 games that I'm playing and transfer them into my Vita, and I'll be able to play them wherever I go.
Pending an update, maybe, possibly.
Well,
I just kind of wanted wanted to say something, but then they kind of got into this thing about how much he plays games already, and it really went downhill from there, and I was like, I got to get up.
Excuse me, sir.
That's just her.
Gunnet
that's
Lee
just playing
here.
Her hard to get, so when she gets a phone for his birthday, he's really happy.
Do you know who I am?
I'm the manager.
My name's Gunnet Lee.
But did you see?
Video game expert.
I really didn't want to walk into the middle of, baby, you're already up too late playing Modern Warfare. Oh, okay. I'm going to go get
Starbucks.
But
on that regard, though, did you see the whole MLB The Show? You buy, you can go, they're doing a special discount. So you can get the PS3 and Vita game together for $80, and it's cloud saved, so you can continue your season on both.
I am 100% supportive of this. That is awesome.
Or MotorStorm RC
is awesome.
It's awesome.
There are a few examples of it.
And by the way, MLB The Show is annually the best baseball game.
Oh yeah, by far.
The whole cloud saves, continue your game anywhere concept is awesome, and I support it wholeheartedly.
When it works.
Well,
because
the assumption is that it would work.
You know, there was a little hiccup with that on the live system the other day. I didn't see. I think they must have gotten it fixed quickly, but I think it was one of the Giant Bomb guys. It was either Ryan or Patrick was trying to load up one of their games off their cloud save, and it was not connecting. I thought, you know, here it goes. So the first time it happens, but how often is this going to happen, and how are you really going to be? We're not really to that point yet where our internet connections are that great to be thinking, oh, I'm just going to keep everything on the cloud. Fuck it.
Yeah, I mean, you almost want to keep your save there and have it backed up in the cloud. And then, you know, if you go somewhere else, great, you can continue. But at least you always have a local copy in terms of that sort of stuff.
I think people will come around to it, though, to some extent. I mean, how many people have their emails or docs, you know, they're using? Like, Microsoft now has an ad that's going after Google. Like, don't just store everything on Google Docs or use email. Like, what happens? Because if that's down, don't use Google apps for your network or for your business because it's in the cloud and blah, 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 go to Windows. But I feel like the fact that that ad exists demonstrates that a lot of people are very comfortable just saving things up to
That's
the
true.
Cloud. And, I mean, do you back up your Gmails? I don't remember the last time I pulled things down. Maybe in a workplace environment they go in, you know, into the infrastructure and pull things and have it locally saved somewhere. But
it's a generational thing,
I think. If we're talking about games, there's, you know, a little bit of difference here in that I'm much more worried about the data in a game save that I've plowed 20 or 30 hours into, for instance, you know, on Mass Effect 3 or something like that, than I am an email chain that I've been doing today that is probably an email that even within the next couple of weeks, even if it's important, I'm just going to delete.
Well, and the email thing, like, you can hold off on the email, you can deal with that later, or maybe you do have it locally. The game thing is the interesting part of that, and like you said, is it's when the service isn't there that you're expecting to be there so you can sit down and play your game and pick off, because you have everything you need to play your game there, but a key portion of it is saved somewhere else. And that's kind of what's more frustrating. Whereas, you know, if your email's down, you're like, all right, I'll do my email later. But when you want to sit down and you have some time blocked out to spend some time with a game you've been waiting for or wanting to play, you know, it'd be the same thing if you were sitting down to watch a movie and Netflix was out. You'd be sort of like, oh, God, that's really frustrating. And I think that's more of the kind of, you know, it's a little more irritating when your entertainment is available to you. When your email's down, you're like, oh, my email's down.
That thing you need for work that has something important.
Well, if you're trying to work when your email's down, that's a disaster, and you're going and yelling at someone in ID.
Or a blessing.
Well, yeah, maybe.
Or a blessing. All right, so, Christian, what got you to go buy a Vita? What'd you pick up with it?
Uncharted and Wipeout. I love the Uncharted franchise. I love the Wipeout franchise, especially the modern era of Wipeout, I would say, is the PSP and PS3 Wipeouts.
All right.
And that was a big game. But, man, I love Uncharted. I know you said 2 weeks ago, and I don't know if you've played more of it, but you thought it was the straight-to-DVD release. Disagree. I think it's one of...
That's not original. I mean, I can't claim for that, but I can't claim originality on that. But I still
but
will
can claim stealing it.
I will stand beside
borrowing.
That.
I think it's still so good. It starts like classic Uncharted 3, Uncharted 1 kind of, where there's a slow build into the story progression. But the back half of that game is great. The only flaw I find with it is...
it's the J-Lo edition.
Oh, God.
That's the Fiat 500C is the J-Lo edition. That's what you could drive around in.
Be better than your damn Prius.
Yeah, probably.
is first Prius joke
is that you don't connect to the characters. While they haven't said officially where this game is, it all intents and purposes is a prequel based on how certain characters' physical appearance look in the game. But because of that, you don't have the same connection to your co-star that you do because you've built one up with the women in Uncharted 1 through 3. And this time you're kind of like, wait, where's my main boo? I don't care about you.
I don't know. I kind of liked. What is her name? I'm
Chase.
Spacing. Chase. That's right. I liked her. Like
I like her as a character, but I feel like you're not as connected because I know this is. You learn about that relationship, the other relationship in Uncharted 3. You're like, wait a minute. I know how this ends up for Nathan.
Right.
I know what he does. You're just some side B.
I'm glad that they name his female protagonist after things he actually does in the game. You know, I can't wait till he meets climb and shoot.
Hey, dude, you can have a good thing and then be done with it. I mean, it's okay to, you know.
And that's what this game is. It's amazing. And people complain about Uncharted.
It's a three-night stand.
People complain about Uncharted endings, typically. I think Golden Abyss is one of the best Uncharted ending levels and sequences and plots. And keep playing it. It is so good. It doesn't have the huge set pieces that the PS3 ones do, like the airplane, but the little graphical flourishes are there. There's a level where you're in a big cave that is beautiful.
Did you adjust the sensitivity on the sticks? Because that did help me some with it.
I did not. I kept it default. I really liked the fine-tuning by using the screen to aim.
That works pretty
great.
Well.
And I don't know if it's a hardware limitation, but there were less guys per encounter. Like I was talking about, would make Uncharted 3 better if they didn't throw 100 guys at you. I feel like there was the right amount of people per kill box, where I never got frustrated walking into a room and going, "Oh, this is going to be
all that." Having been said, the narrative piece of it to me still does not live up to my expectations for the series from the Naughty Dog entries.
Do you know why? Can you put your finger on it, or it just doesn't feel right? Because I really, especially the back half of the game, it really.
I guess I need to. Okay,
together.
I could keep playing to go to the back half, but I've sort of also lost interest because it doesn't. The knitting together of it with the actual mechanics of what I'm doing in the game doesn't work as well either for me. So the shooting is not as fun. Mm. I still am tired of messing around, even with the fine tuning and all that. It does not feel as good to me. And you know, people are like, "Oh, well, shooting doesn't feel good in Uncharted." Actually, I thought after I got accustomed to it, shooting was pretty good. Obviously, some people disagree. And if you disagree, you're certainly welcome to that opinion. But I thought it was good enough to carry the rest of the story and do all the other things in the game that I enjoyed. And then all of the touchscreen stuff just feels so like, look, we have a new shiny toy to play with.
I love touchscreen climbing.
I do too.
Climbing is fucking fantastic.
Dude, it defeats the purpose of, there's nothing to it. You just trace a line on the screen.
There's nothing to it anyway.
There's nothing to it anyway. The one thing that always kind of got to me in Uncharted, you would get stuck on something or like you wouldn't quite be able to make a jump and you couldn't get him to exactly get it.
Yes.
That does happen a couple times in this game too. Once with the touchscreen where I just couldn't get him to do the jump I wanted. I kept getting killed by this guy in a turret. I don't know where you're trying to get around this room. But for the most part, it's like, oh, thank God, I can just draw where I want to go and I don't have to sit there and kind of fight the controls a little bit. And there's no frustrating moments when you're climbing that way. And I still have to look at it and see it, but you never really had a chance of falling. And the times where you do have a chance of falling, you have to do something timing-wise. You actually have to touch the screen quickly or you have to input something quickly, so there is that sense of danger. So I really thought it worked really well.
I appreciate what you're saying, that there's no that really there's nothing to it. There's not a fail state to climbing, usually, other than the timing parts.
Right.
And while holding a direction and pushing X.
I hear you.
The main path might be highlighted with like yellow or whatever light to guide points, but a lot of the treasures and secrets are off in places climbing that you have to pick out in the environment that don't have, you know, yellow or blue paint on them. And I also think the touchscreen interactions for fighting and other things throughout the game, charcoal rubbings, I like them. It's a great change of pace. They don't take very long, and it's kind of like a breather moment where you're like,
my favorite touch actually is on the ropes when you're touching rear on
touch?
The back, the rear touch. And
or
you
the
just
sniper
kind of,
zoom
yeah,
rear
and,
touch?
Yeah.
Oh,
and I was actually, at first, I got
so
really
good.
Confused because it's really hard to teach someone how to like, oh, your touch that's going on the back of the screen when you're showing a picture
they
of
They love
the
loving
final.
Things, Jeff.
But clearly. I just
gave it to Jeff.
Yeah, I was over at Christian's house the other day and left his house and went and bought a Vita.
That was where they coordinated.
Really?
That's how convincing he was to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was like, gray, long sleeve, next time we do Weekend Confirmed and go buy a Vita. And
Christian's good at brainwashing.
Yeah. Well, Obviously. He's fooled people into thinking he's a comedian.
And that I know things about video games. So I'm 2 for 2. I'm doing pretty good.
So if you like, do you like the shooting part?
I do.
Do you like the idea of playing shooting games? Because if you do, I really think you should check out Unit 13.
I have the demo.
It's really good.
It plays well.
It's really good. It's really, really good.
It plays well. I'm not sure how the full-length game will be, if it will hold my attention. I played the... it's Zipper, right?
Yeah, Zipper.
And
well,
I,
the full-length
I just don't
game,
know.
Keep in mind, is divided into small chunks. Right. And the idea being that you go play those missions and you can replay them and get more out of them. So... It's do you like the idea of running short combat ops on your portable, which I think really fits well to the device and the kind of time chunks you have to play on it. I like the idea of it. And it plays really well. I would say it plays really well. So I think it's my counterpoint to Uncharted, where Uncharted has the gunplay action in it in third person, admittedly, which is a little different. And it just felt wrong. And even with the sticks tuned, it still didn't feel right. Unit 13, I play that. And all of a sudden, I'm like, okay, well, actually, this works pretty
and
well.
I think it proves that Call of Duty could be a beast on the Vita when it comes out.
It's going to be gigantic.
Right?
I mean, and especially think about, like, kids on the bus with a 3G connection. Like, mommy, buy me a 3G card. And, like, sitting on the bus playing Call of Duty multiplayer.
That could be a great bundle if they can, Activision and Sony, a 3G with Call of Duty, a 3G device.
Yeah, and service. Like,
yeah.
Bam.
Cha-ching.
And all they have to do is look at how well they've done with those Modern Warfare Xbox 360 bundles and go,
yeah.
Yeah, I could do that. Yeah, we could do that. We could definitely do that. We'll sell some Vitas that way. All right, what else? You got Wipeout. Anyone else play Wipeouts?
I haven't played Wipeout yet, but I really want to.
It's really good. Some of the complaints I read online, you know, some of the reviews said the frame rate stutters and things like that, and it doesn't have the sense of speed. I haven't noticed those problems. It doesn't progress as quickly through the ranks as some of the past PSP ones, where you can change, you can pick Viper, you can change the speed settings manually, and the way the campaign progresses is a little bit of a disappointment compared to the past PSP games. But it's beautiful. It's Wipeout. I play with the classic Wipeout controls. You know, each trigger is its own air brake. Online, I haven't had any problems. The only place I've had problems getting into games is with cross-platform play. A few times it just pings out and I'm not able to get in.
But the fact that you can do that is cool.
It's cool. And I'm also discounting both of these games a little bit. This is where I'm a little bit of a hypocrite. But it's like, are they perfect? No. Is it the first gen, first game? It's like playing Uncharted 1 for the first time on the PS3. They get a lot right. And there's room for growth and improvement, certainly. But it's amazing. They're doing a lot of good.
So, Jeff, when you went and bought your new Vita, what did you buy with it?
As far as games,
he texted me, can I borrow your Uncharted or do I have to buy it myself?
Honestly, nothing.
So I didn't buy a single game yet.
I haven't bought a single game yet. I went home and downloaded
single-handedly bringing down the attach rate.
Well, yes, I am. But here's the thing. I love the fact that they're all downloadable. Yeah. That's how I want to interact with this device.
How big a card did you buy?
I only have an 8 gig, and
that's going to last you a week.
Yeah, James and I were just talking
about it.
I'm already on a 32.
You can delete rebuy though.
Well, you can delete. You don't even have to delete rebuy.
You can just keep spending money, dude.
So you can re-download, and downloading takes a while from PSN as always. But what you can do is you can hook up to your Mac or your PC, and you can use the content manager, and you can offload the games. You can back up the whole device.
Super
so
cool.
So it was actually great because I had my card, and I filled it up like the third day, and I was like, shit. So I went home, I backed it up, I bought a 32, which were hard to find, actually. I went to a couple stores, couldn't find a 32 anywhere, but I finally found one like on the back of a rack at a GameStop.
Some kid showed up there later and was so pissed.
Like, I know. I was like, son of a bitch,
they
I
hit
saved
it. Back.
It. Oh, God, so good. But, yeah, and then you back it up and
G.I. Joe's.
Restore it, and it worked great. All my games are there. I downloaded a bunch more games, and now I have space for that. But... I mean, the games, you know, they're hitting 1.5-2 gigs for some of these new ones. Yeah. So an 8 gig card is not going to last you very long. And
but
the
that's how I like to. That's how I like what I like about the device. I don't.
So what did you get then?
Rayman.
Oh yeah.
No argument with that.
Yeah, that's
and
that's
beautiful
like
on that.
It's lush.
Gorgeous. Yeah. And I even love how they have the. They have like the pinch
zoom.
To zoom. So it's like, because it was really funny. We're sitting and playing, like, wouldn't it be awesome if you could pinch and zoom in and out? And I tried it. I'm like, holy shit, you actually can. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I wish it had the multiplayer, though.
I know. I do too. The multiplayer is so great in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame. And you should be able to play online. It's too bad. I also got.
Little Deviants.
Yeah, Little Deviants. Yeah. Deviants. And I want to get. Everybody's telling me I need to get Mutant Blob. So I'm
Mutant Blob is fantastic. If you have a Vita and you haven't downloaded it, it's like $6 or $7. And
it's $7.99, I think.
$7.99, yeah. So it's. platform. It's kind of like a, I mean, platform where you're something tiny in the real world. It's a little alien blob, but Katamari, where you're trying to suck up all these different objects, which eventually allows you to suck up bigger objects, which are blocking pathways. And it's just an awesome platformer. It's got a real kind of whimsical sense.
That's sort of unexpected.
College. It's fantastic. It is definitely probably my favorite game that I've played so far on the Vita. Just, I mean, like,
really?
Uncharted's great. Rayman's great. There's a lot of great games, but. No.
Distraction.
That was a very long comment. Like, I was like, wait, did he say something else? It just is so polished and it's fun and it's small and it's $7 and you can download it. And I'm just, it feels very new. It feels very fresh. And while like these other games are fantastic because I'm getting to play a console experience on a handheld, laying in bed, you know, doing that. And that feels really fun. This is something that feels really new and original, and from that regard, I'm really, really enjoying it. And it's a no-brainer for $8.
The one game that I was most excited about that I haven't downloaded because I'm not sure about, maybe you guys can tell me, No Escape.
I've been playing that, too.
And is it good? Is it worth it?
Yeah.
15, I think, is what it costs.
Is it 15?
No, I mean, Escape? Escape so, Plan?
Or Escape,
Escape Plan.
That's
I was like, yeah, I don't know that one. I want Escape it. Plan, I don't know what it is, but I want it.
So if you haven't seen Escape Plan, black and white game, there's a kind of a big character.
I've talked about it a good bit.
Small character, yeah. I mean, it's all touchscreen based. Yep. Everything you do is touch based. It feels very at home. It's been something that's kind of been bouncing around Sony Santa Monica for a while. And I really like it. It shows off the system. It's got a really unique sense of style.
Yeah.
And so from that aspect, if you don't mind spending $15 on a game, it's great. I think I probably had a little bit more fun with Mutant Blob for $8. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you know, it's a new system. It's a new toy. And $15 is a lot cheaper than some of the other games. So yeah. I recommend it too, especially if you like something touchscreen, a little puzzle-based. It's got kind of that same Angry Birds mechanic where you're trying to complete the level in as few moves as possible and get 3 stars. And that. So it's got some replayability to it. And, I'm really enjoying it. And style-wise, it's really cool. So if you want a touchscreen-based kind of puzzle game, it's really good.
I love the fact that they have so many demos available in the they should have
one benefit
all
of the digital
the
system
games. They should have all the games offer demos. I mean,
it makes you want to download them. One, how
yes.
The jewel is always there. Like, I have carts for Uncharted, but I still boot up my system and it's blinking there, and I'm like, I'd love to have it
well,
downloaded.
Well, that jewel is actually one of the odd things about managing the system. As you get more and more games installed, you're like, why do I have all these jewels on my screen? What the hell? Sort of obnoxious. But people were mad at me for talking about UI, so I won't talk about UI.
No,
right,
it's clumsy. I will agree with that. The UI, even just the first
time
you turn
refined. It on. It can be refined.
The first time you turn it on is a lot of clunk.
Well, but the one thing I do like about it is how fast and responsive it is and
yes.
how you can jump in and out of games and go over to the store and check other stuff. Like, as clumsy as maybe like the icons are and how that's organized, like the actual responsiveness of it feels like a smartphone rather than a game console.
And even better than a lot of Android tablets I've played with.
Yeah, right, yeah. And it cures the biggest issue that I had with the PSP was that you would put a PSP game in, and by the time you booted the damn thing up, if it was charged, like you would, right, 3-4 minutes later, you're finally into the game, you're loading your game, and it's like, you know, you would spend most of the time just trying to get into the game. And if you have 10 minutes to play a Mutant Blob level, half of your time's gone. If you have 5 minutes to play part of a level, you're not even going to be able to do it. Whereas the Vita, I could literally pull it out, open it up, turn it back on, jump right back into Mutant Blob right where I was, play 5 minutes a level, hit the button, and it does hold a charge relatively well, I found. Like, you can actually go a full day, no problem. You can go a couple days if it's like, you know, kind of in
with
sleep.
Light gaming.
Yeah, with light gaming in between. Not if you're playing Uncharted for 3 hours, you're not going to make it through
right.
a whole day. But if you are just kind of like jumping in here and there and using it kind of like you would a smartphone, but to play a game like that, it works really well, and you can play much cooler games than you could ever get on a smartphone.
So there you go. We'll give you enough time right now to boot a Vita game. When we come back on the other side, we will wrap up a couple of your comments about carryover of PSP games, because there was a strong opinion about that. Jeff, people agree with you. I am wrong. So we'll come right back with all that and more on Weekend Confirmed when we return. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For Weekend Confirmed listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out the service. One audiobook you might want to try is The Hunger Games. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. That's audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. Thanks again to our sponsors, Audible Podcast. I hope you will take advantage of that if you haven't tried out their service before. And it supports Weekend Confirmed. You know,
Hunger
helps
Games.
Us out a little bit. We were actually debating The Hunger Games during the break. Jeff is not a fan.
I didn't care for the book.
which I can't argue too terribly much with. I'm about two-thirds of the way through reading it, and I mean, how did young adult as a name become a stand-in for not that well written?
Well, yeah.
Well, different. It's well written for that audience. If yeah. that
no, it's actually not really that well written.
It's not the dialogue well
is at all. The dialogue is really not that solid in it. I mean, you could write to the audience and be interesting and write appealing characters and do all those sorts of things.
I don't know. It's teenagers.
The Twilight books.
Well, terribly written.
I was going to say, are those better to you than Hunger Games? Which I want to finish your sentence.
I haven't read them.
Yeah, wait.
The Twilight books are.
Have you read a Twilight book?
I scanned them.
No,
I'm
you
not
can say you read
them.
It. I'm not going to.
I read
fun
the
of
first
you.
No,
one.
I haven't read. I no, I have the, not read them.
I haven't read them either, but I hear that they're terribly.
It's very flat. It's. I mean, they read very flat. The world is there and all right. that stuff.
So maybe I should do more than. Maybe I shouldn't do
but
more
even
than.
Hunger Games is not very.
And
well
even
done.
Harry Potter isn't necessarily like the tome of literature, but like no. these books are like escapism.
Okay, so I have read Harry Potter
Harry
books.
Harry Potter
and I think they're pretty
decent. They are well written, they're just poorly plotted. They have she's lovely prose.
Well,
and
no one edited her. No one, there was no strict editing keeping things tight, I feel like.
Yeah.
Especially as the series went on.
All right, so back to my original question then. Since I strayed into Twilight, which I didn't know enough about to bring that point up, so obviously that was a mistake.
That's an insult to me too. Like I knew too much about it.
Why does this idea of it's a young adult novel make it suddenly like, oh, that's a pass, it can be okay?
Because this sort of juvenile feeling that you're only dealing with people who have limited vocabulary, and so you talk down to your audience, sadly. Right. I think, unfortunately, that tends to be the case.
Because I enjoy, like having read a couple, you know, like two-thirds of Hunger Games, I enjoy the premise of it.
Have you seen Battle Royale? If you're excited about Hunger Games, rent Battle Royale and see the premise done well.
Okay.
I think,
or at least,
well, I think the movie's going to be done well. I think the Hunger Games movie looks like it's going to be. Done
I think it's
going to
be the
well.
The rare movie that's better than the book.
I think it's the same reason the Mass Effect books aren't super well written. The Halo books aren't super well written. Romance novels aren't super well written. Most comic books aren't super well written. That's not necessarily.
Before you say that about Halo novels,
painting
like,
with a broad brush.
Yeah, like I mean, Halo has like the Greg Bear novels, which are.
Have you read the Halo books?
I've read two of them. What was the first one?
I haven't read any.
You
of
should
them,
go read the new Halo books, okay. Like the Karen Travis one that just came out,
I
and then the. And which kind of is, I think, feels like they're sort of setting up the pieces for Halo 4 in it, which is kind of cool. And then the two Greg Bear books that are like set way like thousands of years before, millenniums before, I guess, with the Forerunners. Because
there's a difference between good and enjoyable. Like I read things and still like it, but I mean, if it's not a Grant Morrison Batman book, in my opinion, I feel like very rarely is it written as well as what he writes. But I still read almost every single Batman book and love them, but they're not well written all the time.
There's a lot of writers who are writing.
So there you go. Plenty of fodder.
That was a great commercial for Audible. Let's right there. We just continued it well into the
yes,
show.
If you haven't, there you go. You can go try it out. All right. What else did I want to talk about? I feel like these morning shows are weird.
Vita, PSP.
It takes forever to get into the flow.
Let me talk about something really quick. I know we have some big games to talk about. I want to insert one thing real quick.
Okay.
Can I do that?
Sure. We're going to talk about the Vita stuff where you were right.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's that. I like talking about where I'm right. But here, I just want to insert one thing because I won't want to get lost and I'll forget about it if I don't. Because we're talking about portable games, and I'm playing an iOS game that I really want to recommend to everybody in this room and everybody listening. You know how I loved the Spell Tower? That was my crack for a while.
Yeah.
And then I got into the Puzzle Juice. That was my crack for a while. I have a new crack. And its name is Triple Town.
Oh, Triple Town's awesome. Triple Town. I've been playing
it. You guys already know about
this?
Oh,
yeah. Triple Town. Yeah.
Why did no one tell me?
What is it?
It is awesome. It's basically, it's like Minecraft meets Civilization kind of deal.
Wait, how did you get Minecraft out of that?
It's you build a world out of its component parts.
You haven't played Minecraft, have you?
Of course I've played Minecraft. I mean, it's got that kind of, this is actually how it was pitched to me, as Minecraft meets a match 3 game. It's basically, you build a house out of, it starts with a bush. You take a bush, turn it into a tree, you turn a tree, you turn it into a house, you turn a house into a church, you turn a church into.
There's a hot, I think what Jeff's trying to explain.
It's like, there's a parallel there.
There's a hierarchy of materials that you can connect three. It's a connect three game.
It's exactly, but and that's every, how Minecraft is. It's a hierarchy of materials. You craft something out of.
But you go. You go mine things and put them in your toolbox, and you combine them with recipes.
It's not the same game.
This is a Connect.
it takes that concept and does it with Connect 3.
That's brilliant. Okay. Maybe it was a silly way to describe it, but I think it
implies. Well, the thing about Minecraft that's so engaging is the. That's right, you totally played it because you talked about like building your
Minecraft.
Is that
he still didn't believe that he played it? That was the funny part. Like he was like, I don't
How
think
do
he
you
actually
not see
played
the parallel
it
there of the concept of creating something out of smaller component parts, but done it uber simplified it with a match three.
Okay.
All right, we can talk about how I was right now. We can go to that topic. I'm glad everybody knows about it already. Maybe I was the last person to know.
Funny thing is, I mean, you must not have been on the show. There was a news story we had a few weeks ago. The Triple Town guys are in a lawsuit with
Minecraft.
No, it's actually sort of a sad story or sick story. It's a very Hollywood sort of story. They went out and shopped the game around, as developers do, looking for some publication money. A publisher who looked at the game turned them down at the last minute, and then very shortly thereafter released a like almost 100% clone called, I don't even remember what the name of it.
And
you shouldn't even know the name of it.
The clone. Just play Triple Town on Facebook.
You should
it's
be
on
playing
too,
Triple
yeah.
Town, which is the original game. And it was really unfortunate, sort of.
I am so hooked on this game. I love it. Anyway, I guess there's less.
So the cool thing about it is to explain the game is that you're trying to build a city on your screen, and you do it by connecting three. And every time you add the third of a type, it upgrades to the next type. So if you put like three grasses together, when you put the third grass together, it becomes a bush.
A bush, yeah.
And then you put like Minecraft.
Wow.
I thought it was a parallel.
I'm glad you brought it up again, because thinking about this, it's like it's something my wife would actually really like to play, and I haven't introduced it to her, and she's like been playing Dominoes or some shit on her iPhone, and this seems like something I would appreciate her playing.
It's
more.
So good.
No, it's cool. And
the level of strategy involved is intense because you have to set yourself up so far in advance to know that the third thing 12 steps down the line is going to link up with the third thing you just made that was 12 steps down the line from something else. So you're setting yourself up for these chains of creating, you know, I have to create a house out of, you know, creating three of so many things previously, and then I have to create three houses next to each other to create the next thing. So it's
challenging.
Fascinating.
It's definitely challenging.
Great game.
And then the twist, of course, is that you add these little bears that hop around, and you have to trap them, and you have to trap them by walling them off. And when you trap them by walling them off, it creates a tombstone. And when you line up three tombstones, it creates a church. So that's like the real wild card that throws all your best laid plans to shit. And then
you get ninjas who are the freaking bears who teleport to different places on the map.
So they get out of trouble, and you're like,
oh, put you in trouble. Yeah. 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 It's a great game. Anyway.
It is. So it is very cool.
It was
very
new
cool
to me, and I thank the guy on Twitter who sent it to me, whose name I should know, but I don't.
Yeah. So I'm trying to go Triple Down.
All right. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Sorry for that interruption.
So for those of you who lost me, so now he nods his head.
Now back to me being
regularly scheduled.
He sort of gave me the joy. So now, how you doing?
How you doing?
Yeah, we talked about the PSP not getting the transfer system in North America, which I was upset about, and not many other people were upset about. They pretty much were siding with Jeff. Cruel Legacy kicked it off, said he thinks you're right, Jeff, and that you nailed it with regard to backward compatibility on the Vita. Yes, backward compatibility would be a nice bonus, but the idea that we somehow deserve to have an old game we purchased instantly work on a new console is very confusing to me. When I bought a DVD player, I didn't complain that my old VHS tapes wouldn't work on it. This comparison came up often thereafter of, hey, I bought new movie media and my old one didn't work. Whether it was I bought a Blu-ray player and I didn't get my DVDs to work in it, or I bought a DVD player and my VHS didn't work in it.
The one problem with that, while I appreciate that point, is that Sony has kept teasing PSP owners with, first when the Go came out, that we're going to work on a way to get your things over there. And then when the Vita was announced in Japan, it just seemed weird that they said you can do this in Japan, and I think it gave U.S. owners false hope. And so there were some people that probably had a nice collection of games that they wanted to bring over for $5 or $10. Is it a deal breaker? No, but I think that the Sony PR way of announcing it was handled poorly, kind of like the PS3 cross streaming, whatever it's called, from PS3 to Vita.
Remote play.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, and it's kind of a bummer because, you know, I'm sure they looked at it. I'm sure they just ended up in some place figuring out it was too expensive to make it worthwhile for what it was going to do. Because, I mean, I have a nice set of Vita or PSP games. It would have been nice if I could even – I would have even sent some of them in probably. Like if you'd done the whole – when you traded your HD DVDs for Blu-rays.
Yeah.
Like I had to send my discs in or the cases in or whatever. I would do that. I would even send the disc in. I don't
Dissidia?
Even care.
Dissidia? I would have sent
and,
that in.
Yeah. You send it in and just then entitle my account. That would be great. Like in – you know, you do it all online and then send it in. Someone checks the box and they destroy the discs and the publisher's not out anything. Like,
come on, it works for cash for gold.
Yeah, you know, that would have been great. But I'm kind of actually fascinated by it because I feel very compelled to buy a lot of PSP games right now on it just because it's really fast and easy to get in and out. And there's a bunch of awesome.
And they look great.
They look gorgeous. And there's all these great JRPGs and stuff like that that I never really wanted to struggle with dragging a PSP around and dealing with loading and how long that takes to play. And now I'm like, oh man, I can finally play the Final Fantasy IV Complete Collection, or I can go back and play Tactics Ogre, or, you know, all these other games that were sort of that, you know, I didn't get around to on the PSP. Now we're really accessible on the Vita, and I feel like I want to jump back in. So in some ways, I think it may be a good thing that people aren't rushing out and buying used copies. They're going to be downloading new copies, and maybe, hopefully, publishers will see a bunch of sales bumps. Maybe in the long run, this will be a good thing if publishers see a bunch of sales bumps on these Vita game downloads and say, hey, there's a lot of people actually buying content.
And I hear what people are saying, and that's fine. I think that one of my points was that for folks who would be early adopters for this system, they likely are PSP owners. They likely have some PSP games at least, and it would be a nice gesture for those folks who have been your loyal customers and have those games to say, hey, you know what? Vita games will work on this. We only have them available via digital download right now.
PSP games. You said Vita games?
I'm sorry. Your PSP games will work on your Vita. However, we don't have the media in there. We don't have a UMD drive in there. So we know that that's going to cut you off from your old library. We'd like to make a way available for you to be able to enjoy those games that you play that you bought. And it also goes to the idea. And if the idea is here is, well, if I bought a VHS, I didn't necessarily expect that I got a DVD. And keep in mind, part of the big deal there is that you owned a physical VHS tape and then you wanted to own a digital disc. And they had to press the disc and put it in the box and send it out to the store. And now we're into that world of, hey, look, am I buying a license to play the intellectual property like you guys always tell me? Or am I buying the disc? And if I'm buying the disc, then I ought to be able to go down to wherever I want to and trade it in and sell it, because now you're telling me that all I bought was the physical property. Which way do you want it?
The other thing,
you bought a license to play it on a PSP system, not necessarily on a Vita system, though.
That's true.
So, I mean, there's your. If you want to get all like slicing the argument up, but I mean,
I don't want to do that. But I'm just saying that's a little bit of a logic jump in there for me. But primarily, my thought is, hey, it would have been a nice thing to do for folks who had PSPs.
Well, that's where I agree with you, and this tends to happen a lot where people say, "Man, I totally agree with you," when you said and then restate something that you never said. And it's like, well, how did you get that out of what I said? What I was trying to say is that what would have been nice is not to charge you at all. But if really all they're going to do is give you a $5 discount, then it's hard for me to care. It's hard for me to get worked up over, oh, you just get $5 off if you previously owned it. The nice gesture would have been, if you previously owned a PSP version of this game, we will, as an act of good faith of our early adopters, allow you to download that game, send it in, whatever you need to do, whatever hoops I need to jump through, put in my serial number, whatever.
The thing, what it ultimately comes down to is, you know, it's not something Sony can just unilaterally say. Like, there's so many contracts that they have deals and how those games are distributed on PSN. So it almost, and when this happened with, I mean, and this, the thing that this happened kind of with was that whole HD Blu-ray switch over.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like the Blu-ray Association said, oh, send it in, we'll send you a new one. It was it was on a studio level. So like, I think one studio didn't do it at all. Universal did it really strongly. I feel like two studios did it and one
Warner
didn't.
Warner did it, didn't they? Didn't
Warner and Universal, but I think Paramount didn't. So there was no changeover program. And that was, you know, a studio by studio basis. And in the reality of it, Sony doesn't have control over, say, Square Enix's games.
Right.
So maybe they could have like set up a bigger program and let the publishers participate. But again, you're talking about Sony, who doesn't have a lot of cash on hand to kind of do something that's a nice to have, as unfortunate as that is. And then a bunch of publishers that, you know, it's one of those things that, like, it would be so nice, but when it comes down to the practical reality of figuring out the logistics with all the different publishers, the licenses, the deals, how that's going to work, are you going to ship stuff, are we going to set up a big clearinghouse to do this? In the end, I mean, they're kind of like, yeah, it's a lot easier for something on the regional level of Japan versus the
That's
you know, countrywide level, the countrywide multiple publisher level of the U.S.
What I think is kind of weird, though, is that if you had downloaded a PSP game before, you can download that again for free. You can re-download it onto your Vita.
Sure.
And even some of the ones that aren't listed as officially available through the Vita.
You can download to your PS3 and put on, yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, you're almost, to some extent, punished if you bought a game, a UMD version of the game that you can't get it over to the Vita. Versus the digital download version, which you can carry with you anywhere.
I mean, I wouldn't say punished. It's an unfortunate side effect of you wanting physical media the first time. And if you, and I mean, it's more of a bonus for people that bought the download version. Because, again, it comes back to the logistical challenge of, okay, you have a disc. How do we trade that disc for a digital version? And unfortunately, that's a lot bigger challenge.
Just make it work, bro. Quit bringing in reality to this. Just give us...
James, sorry to pour the cold water.
You've been playing a lot of games on your Vita. Are you buying... I mean, we'll talk about those too, but I'm curious. Are you buying them digitally or are you buying cards?
Both.
How do you decide which one you're buying and when?
What are you buying?
Convenience. And people giving me codes for a couple others.
I'm sure he'll be back in six, Christian. Like, this fall we'll be able to do it.
I hope so. Yeah. You're saying it was too late versus a joke being too soon that the RE4 salesman guy is too late?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Oh, got it.
What are you buying?
What you selling? I'll buy it for a good price, stranger.
Circus of values.
I go to the Fragile Eagles desk and do that to him all the time.
Do you feel like opening... I feel like the first thing that's going to break on my Vita is going to be the game card open slot, whatever that flap.
I feel like I need a Coke nail to get
that
in there.
That is sort of a game flap.
It is a
game. It's sort of a game flap. On your Vita.
A Coke nail.
Like, seriously. It's kind of, it was like, honey, will you open that for me? I got to put my Uncharted in.
Did you just imply that you're...
His girlfriend does bumps, is what he's saying.
Yeah,
no, wife. She has nails. My wife has nails. God damn it. My wife does not do
She's cocaine. A really nice one. I can't believe you said that.
I know. Jeez. Yeah, I mean, I guess there's cards. Like, the thing that almost turned you off immediately, because I got, you know, you got the first couple games, I got the game cards, but then it's like, wait, there's nothing in here. Like, yeah. It's a plastic case and a piece of game art, and I think, you know, there's something about, like, when you have a manual and you have a bigger case and you have, like, mm-hmm. a lot of art, but the fact that it's, like, one little sheet of art and then, like, the little tiny little square of paper
your
that's on the game cart,
stamp.
It's kind of like, well, you know what? I don't really know if I miss
James,
having...
you should stop now because people were taking the piss out of me for complaining that that was environmentally wasteful.
To what? To have a bunch of stuff on the inside?
To create the boxes. To create that big damn box just to have... Just have that little card.
Well, it would
in
be
it.
Inconvenient to go in the store and be browsing through little postage stamp sized boxes.
Well, they could have blast packaged them or something. I mean, look, we.
Well,
keep in mind,
but blast packaging is a pain in the ass shrink wise for those stores. They don't want that at all. Like, you, memory cards, man, those get the shit stolen out of them. So, and boxing them up into bigger things like they have to.
I mean, look, we live in an era, though, where you open your 360 case and it's been hollowed out in places just to be more environmentally friendly.
I don't think a tiny little. This much plastic.
That's why I drive a Prius. Jesus.
You didn't even give us the chance to make that joke for you. Come on. I don't know. I don't think it's that.
The cases are super cool looking, though. I mean, from a they're like little mini Blu-ray.
They're cool. They're tiny. They're awesome. They're really cool.
Super cool looking. Really?
Okay,
you're gonna go bear.
Cute.
They're
cool.
Cute. Damn it.
Coolest, we've been talking about the packaging too long.
Yeah. What I will say is I do like the manuals digitally right there. So I've been playing. I mean, like I said, I've been playing Uncharted. I've actually been playing Final Fantasy IV a lot, which is one of the weird old PSP games that.
What lured you to that?
Well, I had the complete collection, but I just never fired it up and. They redid all the art in, and so I just haven't replayed it. Plus, it's got all the posts because, you know, they did the whole after years and they did all those episodes afterwards. I've never played that, so it's sort of an idea to go back.
Where do you find time to play that sort of game on your portable?
It's while my wife's asleep in bed next to me, and I have headphones on and I can play.
High on coke,
right? Yes, so high
it just puts her right to sleep. That's what it.
There you go.
No, she hits the downers afterwards. It's like she got a crash, so she like grabs a bottle of Jack and.
Yeah, so no, I've been playing that.
Couple of crosses and boom.
I played Rayman a bunch, and that's fantastic, and I'm going to be playing more of that. And I really want to get in. I haven't gotten Hot Shots or Wipeout yet. Those are two I really want to play. I have Army Corps. I haven't booted that up yet. I did play.
Whoa. You bought Army Corps?
I didn't buy Army Corps, but I have a copy of Army Corps.
Dramatic pause of awesomeness.
Whoa. Why?
I was like, really?
No, no, I want to play it too. I just haven't gotten.
Okay,
it hasn't. That hasn't made its way in yet. Like I said, and then,
I just that was a surprising addition of your ticking off list. That's not high on my list of stuff. I'd be like, oh, I want that one.
I've heard it's really good though. So
really,
I don't know. A bunch of people said it's decent. Like, okay.
All right, dude. Talk about Binary Domain. I'm done with the Vita. Let's
you done with
on.
The Vita?
Yeah,
dude. I fucking love Binary Domain.
So,
I don't care.
So that's
how
what
much,
I want to hear.
I don't care how much any of you out there make fun of me or belittle me or whatever for my game tastes or my musical tastes for that matter. You like to do that as well.
It's
I love
of the
Binary
crass
Domain.
Humor in it. Is you love it? Is that why? You
know the humor is a little crass at times, but the whole thing has so much personality, it is absolutely hilarious. So if you don't know the game, the director on it was Nagoshi, who did the Yakuza series and is now CEO of Sega. They promoted him to like lead up Sega's publishing, and that makes me excited too, because who knows what he's going to do. And so he's got his sensibility as far as storytelling and characters, which is definitely over the top, little bit caricature-y, but also, you know, just enough reality to keep them like they walk a really weird line. For instance, your sidekick from the beginning of the game is this character named Big Boy, and Big Boy's hilarious. Big Boy
is he on the radio in LA?
Big Boy is better at doing the whole bro thing than all of Gears of War 3, because it's just, I don't know, there's something.
Garnet Lee, Binary Domain better than Gears of War 3.
No, I mean, well, I don't know. I started playing Gears of War 3 with Ariel co-op, and I was sort of reminded of a lot of things. Number one, Gears feels really slow after you've been playing a lot of other games, and boy, it's really Gearsy. You know,
I think that's a good thing. It's
okay.
Gearsy.
I'm not going to say anything about Gears. I really want to talk about Binary Domain because it's really fun.
Does it feel like a derivative game? Because that's kind of the impression I got after playing it at trade shows. But
So it's third-person action shooter with cover, and that part works really well. The engine and the game mechanics of, you know, getting behind cover and shooting things, I was ready for that to be not up to snuff, and it absolutely is. It plays well. The gunplay is good. The targeting, the response to controls, all that stuff works really well. It is funny that, you know, as the game lives up to a higher and higher standard to me, I notice things that are sort of glaring and stand out as not so great. For instance, and this will tell you some about how off it is, or how good it is that the Foley for like footsteps really stands out because it's really bad. You're like, you're playing this game and the game looks pretty and you're having a good time with it, and all of a sudden you're like walking down a hallway and you hear thump 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 thump. I'm like, whoa.
It's like the Resident Evil 1 footstep still.
Yeah. You're like, oh, okay, that stands out as pretty bad. The characters are amazing. I think that there's something to be said for that idea of someone outside of your culture getting their take on it and then creating characters, and not and when they don't miss, they get it in a sort of cool caricature-y sort of here's what we derive from seeing it from the outside as the things that make those characters interesting, you know? So as someone commented, he's like, have you heard the voiceover? It's terrible. Well, it's not terrible like terrible when you hear a game or even, you know, anything that's acted and you hear the voiceover and you know the person is reading the script and has the right personality and character traits to be that person, but they're not carrying off the voiceover. It's bad in that sort of campy, fun way of course I know that British people don't sound like the British operative in this game. But the British operative in this game sounds like that crazy, hilarious, like caricature British voice guy, right? Just like I know that big hulking dudes don't sound like Big Boy in this game. But when Big Boy is like, "Aight, Bo, let's roll out, partner," you're like, that's perfect. That's exactly how I expect this guy to sound in this game. Does that make sense?
It does. I feel like this game, for whatever reason, didn't get the hype behind it. For a while, there was a time where people were thinking, Eastern developers making Western-style game shooters, can they do it right? And it sounds like this game does a lot right, but it never had that buzz or hype train behind it. Like, this is them doing it, and with also a little bit of a send-up or parody in there.
Oh, definitely some send-up. It's fun. It's hilarious. The setup for the game is that in the future, something like 2080-something or whatever, robots started to be developed that were really, really, really smart, almost got sentient. And then there's this Battlestar Galactica twist on the whole thing where they decide, oh, well, we're going to outlaw these human-like robots. But guess what? Some of them are among us. Bum, bum, And so you're part of this team called a Rust team, which is like a UN international team to go hunt down robots, sort of Blade Runner-y sort of thing. You go to Japan, you're in the lower city, and you're after a guy who headed up the organization that, anyway, this is all like getting but you can see,
so you have
the organization that created all the robots, and he might be a robot himself, and anyway,
so you're enamored with the story and the characters and the sense of humor, but yes. I haven't heard you talk anything about how the game feels.
It's great.
Or plays.
It's a rock solid third person cover based shooter. You have a partner with you. The partner is usually useless, which I think is, I've come to accept now that in games where I have partners, if I'm not playing co-op, that the partner's not going to do anything because the game designers don't want me to feel like I'm not playing the game. So I get that.
Did the partner revive you when you're down?
Yeah, no, the partner will revive you when you're down. There's a voice command system that is hilarious. This is funny also, right? Because Mass Effect, I mean, we know has Kinect voice controls. Well, why doesn't it let you use just a headset and do voice controls and Kinect?
Because it's better with Kinect. So in the box.
Exactly.
The Cell Kinect.
Exactly. Yeah. So in this game, you just wear your headset and you can talk into the mic. And that's how you do all the character interactions. And it works 70% of the time, and which is, I mean, it's not. You remember that Lifeline game?
Oh yeah, where it didn't work at all.
Or Brain Age Blue.
Turn around.
Turn the fuck around.
You're gonna die. I can't get out of the first fucking room in this game. And then you stop playing Lifeline forever.
I remember EGM and Crispin, like Crispin and Shane, fucking around with Lifeline and trying to get her to do ridiculous stuff. Lifeline was this game where you played this character, the female character, stuck on a space station where some creepy shit had gone down.
Well, you didn't play her; she was the character. But you were a person in a control room, talking
controller
to her, telling
her
what to do.
Oh, awesome!
Yeah, it was an adventure game. You're like, walk to the door, really? Turn right, open the. Anyway, this game doesn't have exactly that. But while you're playing, there's a, you know, you get this icon when you can talk. And you can actually talk to your characters most all the time, and that's how it handles the character interaction part. And there's, you can, like, when you have a point where it's a dialogue tree, you can hit the left bumper and it'll show you the responses that you could use there to get the dialogue tree, so you're not messing that up. But during the rest of the game, it also understands stuff, so you can be like, oh shit. And then he'll say, and then like Big Boy will be like, dude, it's all right, bro. Just, we got it under control or whatever.
That's awesome. He understands.
It understands amazing vocabulary. And it's like they knew the like ridiculous shit that people would say, because not only does it understand things like awesome and way to go and far out, it like understands fuck and shit and goddamn it. And so you're like, fuck. And he's like, don't worry, it's all right, man. We got it. Or fucking awesome.
Maybe it just responds to loud noise. Loud noise.
No, because
loud noise taking damage. Loud noise with the new item. Like,
yeah.
Oh,
so
okay.
You say that, but it actually when it does voice recognition, it prints up on the screen that it recognizes. It shows you the phrase that it recognizes.
So it shows fuck when you say fuck.
Yeah, when you say fuck, it shows fuck.
Really?
Nice. That's cool.
So yeah, it's really fun. I think it's an underrated, maybe undiscovered gem, and a lot of people will probably be like,
that game was so off my radar. Like, I had heard of it, and that's about it. And now, like,
you should play it. It's fun.
No hype.
I have no doubt that within a matter of weeks, it'll be on an Amazon discount sale or in somebody's bin. And that's fine if you want to wait for that. But I think it's a ton of fun. I really, really like it. It's really fun. So there you go. We had a fun game to wrap up that segment. We still have half of a show left to go. We will come back on the other side. We've got Jeff to talk about some SSX. Christian to talk about I don't know what other than his Prius and how he doesn't love driving anymore. No Forza for you.
No, not. Well, there was a Prius in Forza, right? Or no, it was in
only
GT5.
If you want to lose.
It was in GT5. It was an all Prius race.
Wow. The quietest race of all.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back on the other side, we'll pick this back up.
As far as something that's really going to maybe blow me out of the water, it might not be. It might not be. On a positive note, though, I'm really excited for Project B.
Yeah, Project B is going to be fantastic. Super stoked.
Child Supply. Child Supply.
Project B.
Child Supply.
Project B.
Child Supply.
I am B.
Appropriate.
I am B.
Child Supply.
And it's not because I'm too cool for school.
That's not the reason that's in play here.
School cool.
Project
school
B. Cool.
I'm the baby bear porridge of cool for school.
Cool child's play.
I'm the baby bear project.
You're
bear.
Not big man on campus, but you are project B. But you are a man on campus.
Project B.
Baby bear. Baby bear.
Project B.
Baby bear.
Not that he's not too cool.
School cool.
Project B.
I am appropriately cool.
Child's play.
I am just the right amount. I am
just right. Just right.
I am appropriately cool for the school that I'm going to. Baby bear, baby bear.
Not too much, not too little.
Not too much, not too little. I am appropriately cool.
Appropriately cool.
School cool.
School cool.
School cool.
School cool. Here's an unexpected revelation from this last break. James Stevenson is playing Microsoft Flight.
I am.
And it's that came completely out of left field.
Yeah, I meant to add it to our sheet, but yeah, it's free to play. It just came out on Leap Day, which is a fun birthday for a game. And it's weird because, I mean, if you think about Flight Simulator, you always think about dudes that, you know, sit in their basement and fly a 747 from Tokyo to London for 10 hours. And it's not that at all. And it's free to play. So they're going
to make YouTube videos of crosswind runway landings.
And, right. Yeah. Stuff like that. It's not that. There's no big jets. It's smaller planes. It's that new Icon Sport plane that's coming out next year. And I think that's sort of a sponsorship with them. You, for free, you get the whole big island of Hawaii and you have a bunch of kind of pilot wingy type missions where you fly out to stuff. And it's not pilot wingy in that they're quick missions. They're still kind of complex. You have to take off. You have to land on water. You have to circle stuff. You have to learn how to fly the planes. And there's cockpits and things, but then the DLC.
There's cockpits and things.
Well, you know, the cockpit view on stuff.
Still a flight simulator.
It's still a flight simulator.
There's no big rings in the sky.
No. Well, there's waypoints and stuff, and there'll be air balloons you have to kind of like weave through or something like that or weave around. But, and then, you know, you buy DLC, so there's like a $15 DLC pack that gives you all the other islands. You can fly from island to island.
What do you get with the free to play part?
You get basically a couple planes and the whole big island of Hawaii
which
and a
plane?
Bunch of missions. It's well, there's this new Icon aircraft that
right,
comes
so
out.
Right, so the sport plane thing.
Right, and then there's like a, you know, an old World War II trainer plane.
Red
so
Bull?
You get,
Red it's, Bull it's, Extreme?
It's not a Red Bull Extreme, but it's, you know, it's like, I don't know if it's a Spitfire. I don't remember the name of the plane right now, okay. Which is terrible. But
so you get like two prop planes.
You get a couple prop
and
planes.
And one island of Hawaii.
And one island of Hawaii. So in terms of scale, it's very strange because you've gone from, you know, like, oh, you have the whole country or you can fly over an ocean to you have one little island to fly around. And it's a little more mission-based than before. And there's stuff like – there's interesting things like geocaches sort of where you have to like find where there's an air cache. And it actually like directs you to go to Bing to search. So you can look on satellite maps and find where it's going to be on the island. And then you go into the game and fly to where it's going to be and stuff like that. So there's some really interesting kind of hooks to it. This is obviously the very beginning, free to play. There's going to be a lot of content, I think, added. I mean, I'm sure eventually they'll get you off the islands.
Kauai.
Well, they have Kauai. You can already download that. You can download. You can get the whole Hawaiian island chain. But,
oh, that's cool.
And you can download different aircraft and
Let's
stuff.
Let's say, are there aircraft you can buy yet?
Yep, you can buy aircraft. Nothing, but no like big jumbo jets or anything. I mean, you're just flying around the island, so you don't need anything like that.
You could at least buy like a 737 or something.
No, you can't. No? There's no big. I don't even know if there's a jet yet, actually, in the DLC list. I haven't bought any of the DLC yet because I just started playing it. But
you're playing it with a controller.
Well, I have a flight stick. I need to go dig it out of the closet. I was just trying to try it out. Like, it was like, oh, download. I'm going to check this out for a little bit. And you can play with an Xbox 360 controller and a keyboard. You still need a keyboard to do some of the commands and, you know, adjust your trim. I mean, that's the thing. This is still a flight simulator. You can turn off and turn on a lot of assists. But if you don't, you have to adjust the trim of the aircraft so you keep the nose level when you're flying at speed and things like that. You can sit in the cockpit view and have to see all the gauges. And, you know, there's no HUDs-up display for a lot of those things. There's some for compass.
Do you see your hand push the button when you push?
No, when you're in the plane, it's actually really funny.
It's not a Kinect game.
No. But it is funny because like you don't see yourself when you're flying, and then when you land or something, you see yourself in the plane. But the creepy part is, so you're one of the first missions, you're taking your instructor out to a wedding that's on a boat. You have to fly out and do a low pass of the boat and turn around and land. And she's talking to you and telling you how to fly the plane, teaching you how to fly this plane. But you turn and you look to your side inside the cockpit, and there's no one there. And so it's this really kind of weird, creepy thing where you're like, well, she's sitting here talking to me, and she's playing a ukulele at one point during a long part of the flight, like where you're in a long straight part where you're just like, where they're teaching you to keep the plane level, and she's not there. And I was going,
Microsoft's Insanity Simulator.
Yeah, it's a little interesting.
There's
but
people it, talking to me in my head.
The thing about it,
do you hear that ukulele? Do you? I hear it.
It is free to play, so there's no risk, which is great. You can go on Games for Windows Live. You can download it. It's a couple gigs. And, you know, if you want to play a flight game, it's kind of like I said, it feels like a blend of Pilot Wings and Flight Simulator. And
so are you actually going to pull out your stick, or do you think you'll just stay with the controller?
I think I'll pull out my stick at some point, yeah. I mean, I like the... I mean, I have the stick in the boxy room.
He gave a fair warning.
If you get a stick for games like Hawks and Ace Combat, like I have, and I have to figure out if this stick works with my PC.
You're
as a flight.
You're a plane guy.
I'm a plane guy. I mean, and I've flown like a Yak 52 in real life before, and a couple other things.
You know how to fly?
Fly yes, land no, sort of thing.
Oh, like, okay, so you grab the controls.
Okay, Indiana Jones.
Yeah. Well, no, my family, like my dad is a pilot, my grandfather was a pilot, my brother is training to be a pilot, my cousin, everyone on my dad's side of the family is a pilot except for me. But I have flown planes a few times and gone up with my dad and other people. So I have actually flown, and you know, when you fly like a Yak 52, which is a Russian trainer from the 80s, like it's awesome. You can go into clouds and do acrobatics and stuff like that. So I do have that. That appeals to me, and using a flight stick appeals to me. So,
look, if you've flown much in commercial jets, you have to think at some point in time, wow, I wonder what it's like. This would be really cool. You know, like last night, I'm landing back into LAX, and there was crosswinds, and you know, you could feel how the pilot was using the rudder at the back to sort of guide the plane and steer it through the winds and keep it lined up on the runway. And I'm thinking, wow, that would be a really cool game. I wouldn't want to have to try and do it in real life.
Well, and that's the interesting thing. Like, I don't know. It's interesting because I don't know if my core fantasy is flying the 737 and landing at LAX in crosswinds. And I know for some people that is, and they want to do that. And I think hopefully the game offers that, and the old flight simulators did.
Yeah.
This game definitely seems like the fantasy is for people that want to fly like the biplane and see sights. And, you know, do a little bit of turning and kind of maybe some acrobatics.
That's
like that.
Probably way more appealing anyway. I mean, you think about where flight sims had gone. They got to be to where they were really playing to that, I want to land a 737 at this airport in this situation. And then remember, they even had packs added on like all the air traffic control stuff to where you had to, you know, of course,
radio the towers and all
that. get your releases across all of the air traffic control systems, from you know, departure control to the first, I forget all the names for that stuff, but anyway, you know what I'm talking about.
I've flown through the mountains over ice and snow on my snowboard
with your wings. I like the transition. That was nice. That was very good.
Thank you. SSX, it's back, baby.
That's the marketing message right there. SSX. Yeah. It's back, baby.
Did you? I think it was Plan B tweeted that it felt wrong on the.
Yeah.
He had to sit down, and I don't know what it is. I've just played a smidge, so you can talk about it. But I did have a hard time adjusting mentally on a 360 controller, which is weird.
Well, I'm
playing because it wasn't PS.
Right.
Yeah. I'm playing it in a different way than I've ever played it before because I'm using the stick controls.
Oh.
So I'm not playing it in the old school way that I used to love. But I've embraced the stick controls, which I really, really like. I really dig it. I think they did a good job with that.
Okay.
The grabs
and
stuff
listening.
Mapped to the stick. It's kind of actually Dan, my co-host on TRS, described it really well. It's sort of like the Fight Night controls brought to snowboarding, you know, where it's kind of intuitive if you lock into which direction of the stick is which limb of your body or which sort of side of your board.
So you sort of get to a familiarity sense of pushing up and rolling to the right does this, pushing right and rolling up does this. That makes I could see it. That development.
I think it works really well. And I was a big buttons guy. And if you had asked me before I played it what I would prefer, I would have been like, oh, no, I'm going to stick with the classic.
Did you try? Did you just jump right into it? Because that's the default is the stick.
Yeah, which is why I was like, oh, I'll give this a shot.
Did you ever try back to button? Like,
I mean, you can do it at any time. You can just move your thumb.
I was just curious if you
tried buttons. Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge SSX fan, so that's how I have all played all the games.
So given the way the game originally debuted and the evolution it went through during its development, walk through like the beginning of like how the game presented itself to you, what you expected, what you got.
Well, it's really cool. I think the little tutorial thing that you get at the beginning is really clever because they throw you out of a plane super high in the air and they just let you plummet toward the earth and try out all your tricks. So you don't ever have to hit a jump correctly to try the stick controls or to pull off tricks or to figure out how the trick system works. You're just plummeting toward the earth. So you have all the time in the world to just flippity-doo.
Well, not all the time.
Well, pretty much. I mean, it basically says, when do you want to deploy your suit?
Oh, that's cool. So you can just keep going.
You just keep going.
That's a lot of flippity doos.
Yeah, yeah. It's a built-in little tutorial. So I thought that was pretty clever.
It is, but it's also misleading because I felt like going from that to going into run, like, oh, I got this, and I deployed, and I went into a run, and then versus flippity-doo or whatever it was you said, versus getting back into that old SSX rhythm of hitting jumps, hitting tricks, and being on top of things. Yeah, I was not.
Really?
I was not ready to jump back in. But, oh, yeah?
Yeah. It's great when it's great, and it's disappointing when it's a little less than great. And
how do you mean?
Race It and Trick It are fantastic. It's that old school SSX feel with a new engine, with a great animation system, with really fun over the top stuff. The mountains feel really wide open with tons of alternate routes and huge moments and dramatic cliff drops and all kinds of really fun stuff.
Awesome.
Yes. So right there, must buy for an SSX fan. As I said, it's back. It feels like this is the game I've been wanting for years now to play this, feel like this again. That, like, oh my God, I just hit my Uber. You know, yeah, I'm glowing. I took my board off and spun it around my neck and threw it forward and, you know, it way over the top and fun. So that's all there. And I love that. And all the improvements that they made for those modes are great. I love the fact the online integration is great, the ghosting that you can do now, so you can, you know, compete.
So yeah, the
your
online
friends.
Part, yeah. The online
That's
part
awesome.
Really has been collecting a lot of good love.
It's great. It's really, really well done.
So it's all ghost races.
Yeah, so you can compete against your friends when they're not online, which is great. I mean, it's been around in racing games for a while.
But say, it sounds like a lesson learned from the Criterion stuff in racing.
Yes, exactly. I think that's very much the case. The Deadly Descent stuff, which we all can all agree with, they pulled back from a little bit from their first announcement, I think. The fact that it's still there, it's an interesting idea. It's just not fun. It's just not as fun as the rest of the game. The concept of SSX is so much fun and puts fun at the top of the list of what it's concerned about. It's not concerned about realism. It's not concerned about presenting an accurate depiction of snowboarding. It's not concerned about physics and you know, creation.
Well, right, that's where Amped 1 and 2 stepped in.
Exactly, exactly. But what it is concerned with is, oh my God, it feels amazing when you go higher than any human being could possibly go and
right.
Fireworks shoot in your face and your guy does something that no human being could do. That's so fun, right? That's what SSX is, but when you're then going, okay, well, now you have to have armor on because it's going to be dark and there's going to be trees falling on you. That's like, well, that's not – none of that's fun. So the whole survive it modes aren't fun. Like, well, it's going to be super cold, so you have to push a button every so often to warm yourself because you might die from the cold.
How optional
none of
is
that's
that?
Fun.
How optional is that, though?
You can avoid those for the most part. And still progress pretty well and just do things around that. But it's like, why do they waste the time adding in? I get wanting to push the genre forward or push the series forward and introduce new things. And from a conceptual level, the idea of wingsuits is rad and armor. Yeah, dude, cool. And breathing in low thin air atmosphere. Oh, all that sounds really extreme and cool. In
not
reality,
so much.
In the reality, it's just not as fun as the rest of the
so wait,
game.
Are you not a wingsuit fan?
The idea of a wingsuit, when you say
no, but
SSX
I mean,
with a wingsuit, yes, sign me up.
But SSX with a wingsuit?
The implementation of it, it's just not particularly fun. When compared to all the fun stuff you get to do in the rest of the game.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And, you know, it's just kind of tedious, and especially like how they throw you into the dark, where it's like, well, yeah, the idea of trying to survive a mountain run is compelling on a certain level of like, oh, wow, that's kind of a cool idea of like, wow, the environment is really out to get me and I have to see if I can get through it. But I just want it to be done. There's no moment of excitement that I have in all the other facets of the game where I'm excited about this big trick coming up. I'm excited about planning my route. I'm excited about it if I can beat that guy to the end of the mountain. This is just like, I want to get this over with, and it's not pleasant.
It's interesting because that's one of the, I mean, you're drawing a differentiation, I think, between something that I always have encountered in games like this. For instance, in SSX, I wanted to go run the runs over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to see what kind of tricks I could pull off.
Sure.
Where I might be able to deviate from the main course, what sort of shortcuts and stuff there are, that kind of thing. And that was always fun. Granted, the more focused I was on trying to get the score combo up, the more frustrating nature of it sort of crept in.
Sure.
Right? But
that's how these games
are. That's how they
are.
And then on a regular basis, you know, eventually after I'd gotten where I was happy with it, I was just running the runs just to see what the hell I could do on it. Whereas it sounds like Survive It is much more of the, because of the very nature of Survive It,
right,
is just a pressure filled, not as much like, okay, make yourself live and get to the bottom.
Exactly. If you finish the level, you did well. And it's like, well, but so all the points where I haven't finished the level yet, all I'm doing is trying to finish the level. I'm not enjoying the moment to moment of the level. I'm just getting to the end.
So are you spending a lot of time going back to the multiplayer and looking at your friends list? And
that's the best part.
With that?
That's really fun, especially with the race modes. It's really fun, and trying to beat your friends' trick scores is awesome. Just the explore mode is great. Oh, the other big new feature is the rewind. You know, which we've seen in a lot of games. And Forza has it, and a lot of games have it. And I would have thought that would be a great addition to this game. I would have thought that would have alleviated a lot of those frustration moments of like, oh, yeah, I missed that trick. Unfortunately, in order to make it fair, I think that they said, well, you can rewind, but the whole world isn't going to rewind. You're just going to rewind. So all the other dudes, all the other AI opponents that you're fighting, those guys aren't rewinding.
Hmm.
So it's like, well, if I rewound once, I lost in a race situation. So I may as well just restart the race like I used to when I went careening off the mountain. You know, so it ultimately doesn't help me in any particular way. And if you rewind in a trick thing, you lose points. So it's
you lose the – like a set amount?
No, the longer you rewind, it just starts going negative, 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 negative. And then, you know, it's like, well.
But of course, you were gaining – well, I guess you weren't gaining points because you made a mistake.
Right. So if you crash into a tree and your guy's like awkward and there's no like ring out kind of reset you on the course thing,
ooh,
you always have to use your
rewind to get back
ooh, on.
That's a bummer.
So it's ultimately it's like, well, if I fucked up, I should just restart like I used to.
That seems like a weird thing to have made it past
the
gameplay maturation process.
I mean, I understand the balance there of the of being able to just sort of rely on rewind and cheat, basically. And so in order to prevent that, it's a give and take there.
Right.
But I don't – it just turned out to be not a very functional thing.
I feel like I want the $20 to $25 downloadable version of the trick and race of SSX2.
Well, it's a big game, and there's a lot to it, and the mountains are awesome, and you know, there's a lot of varied kinds of mountains and things you're doing. So, I mean, it's a big game. It's not. I don't mean to diminish it.
Find the just a little bit I've played with it, like the different aspects of the store and the shop and the world and get this world. I found that. I don't know if it's the UI, I guess the interface or navigation is a little clumsier than I want to get in and do this. Am I weird in that regard?
I don't think it's particularly clumsier than any, you know, Forza or GTA
I
don't think it's, or Madden, you know, I think it's pretty par for the course with those kinds
of games.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have it sitting there on the coffee table going, play me.
The thing that the story that they sort of impose on this is...
the motion comic?
Throwaway.
Well,
yeah.
It's funny because you don't hear people talking about that or the survival modes. You just hear people about, I want to get online, I'm going to race, I'm going to tricks, and my friends. And,
yeah,
and
that's
my
where they nail it.
And that's the most important thing, really. And I think that's almost like, you're talking about, oh, a $15, $20 version, but the real reason you want to go buy this game for $60 right now is that your friends are playing it and they're posting scores.
Yes,
and if you want to get into this competition with them, like now is the time to go play this. You don't want to wait for it to sit on the shelf when they aren't playing anymore and don't care about their scores.
Yeah.
This is the time when everyone's competing and enjoying
this
game.
It's exactly like Speedwall was in the Need for Speed when it worked,
mm-hmm,
which was not so much in Run, but
or
in
Burnout or
Hot Pursuit, it worked really well. Yeah, I have it sitting there begging me. I have this other game I have to keep playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you bastard.
Commander Shepard.
So, you know, interestingly enough, because it comes out next week.
Just so, like, it always happens. There's always something that comes out during GDC. And you're
why?
Just like, damn it.
Why
like,
does
I wish
Mass Effect 3 come out in the middle of GDC?
Because it can.
I don't know. I mean, they know when it is ahead of time. I just think it's odd that that was when it ultimately wound up
I feel like
dropping.
GDC isn't anywhere near E3. You know what I mean? Like, it's not... More and more, there is big news that comes out.
There's a lot that happens.
But I don't know for the gamer out there if it's as big as a mental block of news and coverage. And Mass Effect 3 has had a pretty good lead up in press.
Yes.
And
people are
aware of it. So I don't know.
It's not going to hurt.
It
may affect the hardcore gamers' attention slightly, but it's not going to affect the mass audience.
I think GDC is going to be affected by Mass Effect versus the other way around.
It could be. I'm really anxious. They're going to have the multiplayer servers turn on Monday, which is like the last minute before getting the reviews finished, because we will have a review up on Tuesday. I think Jeff, you're going to play it. I know.
Yeah.
So I think we'll I think we'll probably hold most of, like, next week we'll talk about GDC stuff, which unfortunately, you know, there'll be Mass Effect, but
that's
kind of
how we're doing with TRS as well, is that all our Mass Effect coverage will have to be postponed. Unfortunately,
I don't think there's no one out there right now who's waiting on a review to buy Mass Effect 3 anyway.
This is correct.
So I don't think it's a violation of any terms or anything I've agreed to say, guess what? You're not going to be disappointed. You know, I loved 1 and I was a little bit I liked 2, but I liked 1 is my favorite because I loved the overarching narrative. And I loved the combination of engagement and story and
I'm the exact opposite from
one. And you love 2.
Two trumps 1 for me. Yeah.
For story or for mechanics?
Both. The thing I missed from 1 is some of the inventory management and RPG. It feels more like an RPG when you're dealing with your new gun.
Well, even the Citadel itself, like, just felt more of an RPG space when you're like, okay, this feels like a much bigger world, where a lot of the 2 stuff was a little more narrowly defined. So
all right, you're
going
to be thrilled about 3 then, because the Citadel space is super critical. I mean, not critical, but it is back to being the important space, the hub that you go back and forth to, and it's very RPG-like. There's a number of things that take place inside that world. And then I think that, just to like put a little wrapper on it, to me, 2 was great for its mechanics and its evolution of the combat system, and 3 just nails bring them all together. Mm. Great, great narrative arc, really well worked into the game, really well put together with Shepard and all of the characters and pieces you've like had in 1 and 2 coming together. And then the combat's just freaking awesome.
Yeah, Garnett and I were playing Syndicate co-op together, and over the headset I saw
tweets.
In the background I could hear, what is it? Overload.
So Ariel's playing.
Connect play.
Nice.
The Connect commands. By the way, what do people with Tourette's do with voice command games?
Oh. They have bigger problems.
They see fuck recognized on the bottom of screen when they're playing.
Armor-piercing tits!
Armor-piercing tits.
Speaking of 3s, and I know maybe you guys want to talk about some Syndicate co-op, but...
We'll do that later. We'll be there.
Assassin's Creed 3.
Yeah.
Oh, so excited.
You had mentioned that, and feel free to say this isn't it, and you still can't talk about it, but you were like, I'm right. I just want to let people know that I was right. Mm. Okay. Well, I'll take your beard rubbing and I'll just keep moving. But
yeah, I mean, I still technically can't talk about it because I think it's a leak and not anything else.
No, they posted the box
officially
art.
Announced. The box art is officially announced. So it is American Revolution. Right. It's American Revolution. So, like, that's all formal.
But that, I mean, that wasn't me. That wasn't like.
No, yeah.
It's another thing of like Skywatch, of like this is what I wish would happen, and then it happened.
I feel like it's not. There aren't the tall buildings. There's not the.
Well, dude, that was my video question of the week. Why are people so worried about this? That part, you've done that for 3 fucking games.
Well, that's what we know and love.
Well, if you're into the parkour over anything else, I can understand it. But I think as long as there's new ways, and I mean, there's fortresses. There were some tall buildings back then. There were some churches. And I think you're going to see more wilderness too.
Ramparts.
That's, I mean, like, the cities are small portions of it. And so if you're talking about like Boston and New York and all the woods in between and all the stuff that happens in between and the little roads and the side villages, that's where you're going to see the action.
And this is exactly what a series needs. A series needs a forced change that's forced not by imposing the concept of change on it, but by finding a context that informs the necessity for change. So you have established systems that
that was heady, yeah.
Well, you established
stroke my chin a little bit, informing the notice of change.
No. What I'm trying to say is you have the established systems over 3 games that you've relied upon and used effectively.
4,
and now you,
actually.
Yeah.
4. Yeah, 4, exactly. And you have now decided to go
and create a context which forces you outside that safety zone.
Completely agree.
Right. From a design concept.
I don't need another Assassin's Creed 2 Revelations Brotherhood.
Yeah, like, right. I think Brotherhood sort of proved that.
Right. And the third game in that was sort of like, all right, I'm... Was it Revelations? I didn't really have much of a desire to get into it.
So let that naturally, that organically push you forward and be bolder in your design choices organically from saying we want to set it here, we want to revolve it around this revolution or this, you know, this location. So that can inform all the other parts of the game, the way you play. I think that's a really exciting choice.
Well, and see, I think you're probably thinking this is causing that. The setting is causing the changes. I think that's more hand in hand. I don't think you're like, okay, we're going to do American Revolution. Now what do we do? I think it's what could we do if we did American Revolution?
Right.
And they talk about it and they're like, okay, this would be a really cool design. And when they see that the potential's there, then they decide to do all of that.
But
it's
either
not
way,
a,
that's an organic.
Sure,
it's not like,
sure,
you know,
sure.
What would be great is if we threw out this and just try. So let's. You know, it's not shoehorning something or placing
something onto the series. If you do context is the most important thing, you say the American Revolution is the most important thing, then you could get into the shoehorning thing. Whereas if you design it from the start and say, what could we do if we set it in this location? That's where you get the true innovation.
Well, and break down the design development of the series thus far a little bit. Go back all the way to 1, and the initial promise of 1 wasn't just parkour. What happened was they had lots of ideas about being an assassin, how does assassin like operate in the world, being part of the guild. And the game, though, I mean, I didn't like 1 that well because of its repetitive nature and because they hadn't figured out all the things to do inside the world. But the one thing they came out of 1 saying was, wow, this parkour thing we've got, it's pretty fucking badass. Let's do more of that. And so they started into the 2 arc. And in the 2 arc, they really honed and refined building the game around that mechanic, having that being the core game experience in the game. And it works great. And you loved it. And now they've completely done that. And over the course of that, I'm sure they've learned a lot of lessons about how to build an Assassin's game and what they could potentially do and had a lot of ideas. And now they can go back and go, what were some of those things we thought about when we were designing this idea of an assassin that aren't just doing parkour, that relate to, you know, open spaces or relate to working in a crowd? Remember the whole crowd thing?
The crowd stuff. And as you say, open spaces, like you look at this guy, he's got a tomahawk. So the assumption is there's some sort of like Indian heritage there. So it makes total
Native
sense.
Native
American heritage. My apologies. So it makes sense, though, that he could be really comfortable in the outdoors, and maybe that's part of the character. And then again, that brings in a whole ton of new mechanics.
So awesome.
I do get excited about the possibility of a Rambo scene where he comes out of the water with his eyes closed and the eyes open, like that kind of.
That would be badass.
Rambo is Native American.
Indian, I think. Do you think the costume? Have you looked at the? I mean, I understand it looks like Assassin's Creed-y, but it also looks out of place to me for that time period, whereas the other ones, it kind of fit, like that's what that guy would wear. This guy's like, hey, look, I got Native American type pants and tassels, but otherwise I've got a Renaissance hood on. Let's go kill some people.
Well, I don't know. Maybe
I'm sure it will.
The thing is, like, the one thing, and I think they've done this so spectacularly, and a lot of games should take notice, their marketing has been so well defined around that image of the assassin.
Yeah,
and
head
every
down.
Their key art is so consistent, their packaging is so consistent that even if it doesn't make a lot of sense, they got to stick to it.
It makes dollars.
Right. It makes dollar sense. And hopefully they've got some kind of way of making it make sense story-wise. But, like, you look at that. I looked at the Game Informer cover and the box art. They released a shit ton of that. And there's 3 or 4 images they've released already, and they're all so consistent with each other and so consistent with what came before, yet they also show what's new.
Oh, of course.
And it's just like, as someone who handles some of those things, it's like, bravo, they're at the top of the game on that sort of stuff.
They'll build on. I think it's cool to have the creative spark reignited. Like, that's what you were kind of getting at, right? Of Assassin's Creed. Like, this series, now the creative spark for it reignites. We've built a great deal of love and passion for the series. And at the same time, we get a whole new excitement and enthusiasm about what it might hold again.
I mean, it's very similar to what Infinity Ward did, honestly, by saying, we're going to do a Call of Duty in modern times. How crazy is that? You know? Mm. And unfortunately, I think that's what the series needs again, is some sort of
Call of Duty in space!
Well, I'm not calling for that, although kind of would be cool. But
No, I mean, you get these series that have iteration after iteration, and they sort of get in a rut, and it's so exciting when a team says, well, we're going to really take a fresh look at this and push it forward in what feels to me like a very organic way.
And the thing, too, I think about Assassin's Creed 3 is I think they always knew they were going to do this. I think it's probably been in development since 2,
yeah.
Just with a smaller group. And, you know, Ubi is trying to monopolize or monetize the franchise every year, and they're doing that successfully. But they always knew they were going to get to this point. They just wanted to reuse a lot of the assets to make those two kind of middle stories and keep people buying it every
year. Dude, we all wanted them to go back to the main arc. Sooner or later, they got to get to the end.
Yep.
You got to move forward to get to the end.
It's an amazing concept for a franchise that you have this thing taking place over different eons, different millennia, different historical time periods. I love that. It's such a great, great idea.
We take place over a 2-hour time frame, so we will move on to the end of this show with a little break before we come back with a little news, some Syndicate multiplayer. Christian, you've been playing something?
Mostly we've covered Vita, and a little Skyward Sword, but we can talk about it if you want. But people know what Skyward Sword is. It's
all right.
Good.
We'll take a little break and come back to wrap her up.
Oh, you're back! It's like, oi, hey, hey, hey. It's like, oi, 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 hey, 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 hey. It's like, oi, oi, hey. Oi, 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 hey.
What's my neck?
It's oi, 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 hey.
Why did you just get up and throw something?
Oi, 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 hey.
I'm having fun, honey. Fun.
But you're scaring me.
That's not fun.
Scaring me.
Let's see, Mom, honey. This is my hobby. That's not fun.
Scaring me.
Get the fucking camera around. That's not fun.
Goddamn game sucks.
Why are you playing it?
It's fun.
It scares me sometimes.
Because I'm having fun. Fun.
Oh, motherfucker.
Fun.
Stupid.
Digital version.
Now I'm glad we've had this talk. I think we should all just have a good cry.
I really like the way that one wound up. It was like, really getting going.
I just saw some other pictures of the costume in Assassin's Creed 3, and I'll eat crow immediately. It looks awesome.
Okay.
It looks awesome.
Now, James Stevenson, the power of the interwebs.
The power of the interwebs and other things being posted on
Mitt
the
Romney universe. Over here with his flip-flopping.
Oh, as a businessman.
So, hey, on the subject of the source of that last little sound clip there, games that make you go crazy, some people got into that. Twitch Canon, I really like this idea of sharing games that drive us crazy, but we still play. So I want to keep that going. Twitch Canon's was F-Zero GX as a great example.
Yes. God.
Rubber banding and races so tightly tuned where you can't make a mistake, and even then, that might not be enough with the other AI trying to destroy you constantly. Still, I loved that game, and I had so much fun playing it. Arrgh!
The most hardcore F-Zero ever. So good.
Brutal.
Though.
Brutal.
There was a little thread on Braid, which I really thought was funny.
That's funny.
Which started with Camp Kasagi, who said that he looked up a few answers on YouTube and was frustrated because, and I agree with this, how the hell was I supposed to be expected to know that bonking monsters from underneath would make them bounce up, not to mention the platform on the jigsaw puzzle and a few others? And I think that the one struggle Braid had was that it didn't give you, as the player, oftentimes the tools to put things together. It relied a lot on random discovery.
I disagree 100%.
Yeah, I know.
I think this is just philosophical, but I think the best thing about Braid, I'm so glad that I didn't look up any solutions, that I forced myself to just sit there.
# humble brag.
No. I'm not saying I'm smart.
I'm
saying
so glad that I'm better than you.
Hours and hours. Like just in complete flabbergasted that there could be a solution possible here and feeling dumb. And then when you feel so dumb and then you do that thing that you didn't know was even a thing to do, that is a magical experience in video games.
Boy, that was a Jeffism right there. That was definitely Jeff. When you do that thing that you didn't even know was a thing to do.
Yeah. Well.
So the rest of that story, which was funny, was the Archvile pointed out and Jonathan Blow would obviously agree with you because he did a walkthrough, an air quotes walkthrough for the game.
I don't mean to disrespect anybody because you can play a game however you want, but The easy out is too easy these days because the internet is there, YouTube is there. The easy out is just – it's too tantalizing.
That was Jonathan Blow's argument. Obviously, he did like a two-part walkthrough, which isn't really a walkthrough. It basically says, here's how to start the game, by the way. Now play the game. Don't do a walkthrough.
Yeah.
And I loved it because Kitten Tactics reminded me and reminded all of us of Jeff Green's response to that. Do you remember Jeff Green's response to the Jonathan Blow lack of
– I don't remember, but I have a feeling it's epic.
Fuck you, man. Just give me the fucking answers.
But it's I mean, I'll get on my soapbox and everybody will be pissed, but it's the journey, not the destination. It's not about getting
Thank
the
you,
fucking,
Ben Sweetland. But that was awesome.
It's the fine line between the two. When something quits being fun, and maybe it's the age we live in of instant gratification, but at some point I'm going to sit there and look at something and I'm no longer having fun. I want to progress and keep having fun with this game, right, with this experience. Then it's worth it to me to look up something.
I think Portal does it very well. Like, Portal gives you those tools every time. You,
absolutely.
Like, and there are puzzles where you're like, how the fuck do I do this? And then when you actually figure it out, you're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. These are all things I knew I could do, but it just was presented in such a challenging way. And it didn't rely on you just to try something randomly. And
that's the beauty of Portal, though, is that I feel like Portal, as opposed to Braid, is a game that if I keep pushing myself to play around with the tools I've been given, I can rationally figure out what I'm supposed to do.
But that's what's so magical about Braid is that you...
He's lighting up like a little schoolgirl.
It's one of my favorite games ever. And it kept rewriting the rules of what's possible, which never happens in games. Usually when that happens, it's because something got fucked up. And You're like, well, how was I supposed to know that? My experience with playing Braid wasn't that. It was a constant rewriting of what is possible here. And that is a magical experience that I think comes along all too rarely in games. And Limbo kind of had that to a certain extent
That's funny you said that because I was thinking that also.
The only rules there are no rules.
Are you seeing Quantum Conundrum next week?
Yes, I am at GDC, yes. Yeah. I'm very excited.
All right, that's cool. I'm seeing it as well, and we're going to talk to Kim.
I hope it has that feeling.
Oh, I think it already is getting there, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. It has the same sort of logic puzzles with different tools and then figuring out how to use your different tools. That's the beauty of that sort of design. I really do enjoy that. I do really enjoy that. So keep sending in your games that have driven you to the brink of controller destruction, but brought you back and kept you coming back for more, or maybe picking up the pieces off the floor. I liked M.H. Silver's, though, comment as well, because I find... I'm probably guilty of this a lot, and I always attributed it to being in the media in the first place, but evidently a lot of people do it. I mean, Silver says, I don't really curse at games, but I do all go on these long, sarcastic diatribes aimed at not present developers sometimes. Like, oh, nice. Great design choice there. I didn't need a chance to actually see the enemy attacking me from off screen anyway. Way to play up your game's strengths.
I have a question for you guys.
Bringing down people that aren't in the room. Who does that? Oh, I did that to Jeff.
Yes, you did. So I have a question for you guys. You know that old idiom of, insanity, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Right.
I often remind myself of that because if I die over and over in like a FPS or something, I oftentimes will continue to like if I enter a room and I go to the left around a pillar and there's like three dudes and I kill those three dudes and then I keep going and then I keep dying right after that, I will still always go into the room and go to the left and be like, oh, Garnet, very unprofessional.
Wow.
Very unprofessional. I will still, instead of going into the room and going to the right
next
time.
Because you want to be right.
I want exactly.
It's like, I can do this. Fuck you, game. I am going to do it. And when you do it, it's almost
you
like...
You said doo-doo, but yes.
When you achieve it, you go and you're almost... It's like peacocking. You're like, yeah, fuck you, game.
Exactly.
I could do it.
Four times, five times, six times, I'm still...
I couldn't do full wings.
No, he put his hands up. You missed this. You can't see it, but Spicer put his hands right up to like where he would have massive boobs.
Or pecs. He's like, yeah, I'm a skinny man. This is me trying to be like
They cuffed. Were cupped, though. They were not like pecs. They were not like pecs. They were cupped down like boobs.
Whatever you imagine, bruh. You fill it with what you want.
Ooh, hot.
But I totally understand that. It's that I'm gonna do this. I don't give a.
I should have been able to do this the first time, and now I'm on the sixth time, and I'm still going. Even though clearly, if I just went in the room the other direction, things would all go different.
And like the other door starts flashing, like, "Hey, buddy, go this way."
Nobody else. Does
you
that.
Should do this instead, probably.
Yeah.
Nope, nope, not going to do that. I'm going this
I know
way.
No, I can. I was so close to killing that dude. Just
did
this
you
way.
Do that in the Souls, Demon Souls, or because that's the game where you? I feel like no. You can't do that.
No,
okay.
I can actually attest to watching him do this in Syndicate. As a matter of fact,
like,
he was definitely doing this. We were playing Syndicate multiplayer, and we'd die, and he'd be like, he would run right back to the same spot.
Are you
and
on the headset? Same progress?
That one part where the garage door opened, and we're like, just go and run to the right, and we did that like four times.
I'm like, Jeff, run hard right, go right, and go all the way to the right, and he's like, no, I can stop. I can get it. I got it right here.
I got those guys.
So was it awesome co-op versus single player? Or was there a reason why there was no online pass? Is it that core to this experience?
I don't think so. But
I thought the co-op was awesome.
I'm not saying that I didn't think it was awesome, but I didn't. I don't.
Because I mean, it was the big thing. I mean, there's no online
we had a great
pass
time.
For this. Co-op is such the big part of this.
So why
game.
Do you not think it's core to the experience? That's
because
a weird
I really
response.
I thought the first the single player was really cool and. Presented the universe in a much more effective way than the co-op did. I thought the co-op felt more like, almost like what you guys were going for with Resistance in 2. It felt more like almost an MMO in a first-person shooter.
Well, you know, when we were playing it, one of my first comments to you was, wow, this is like Brink, but done right,
is working. What you said.
I think I did, but more fun.
Yeah.
Because I really enjoyed Brink.
It very feels... Yeah,
you know, I really liked Brink, and I thought Brink was... Because I liked Enemy Territory Quake Wars, but I think that the little bit dialing back that Syndicate has, and how Syndicate, everything... So Syndicate still has classes, and you have support actions, but everything is mapped to the left bumper.
Yeah.
So no matter what you need to do... It's very easy to do the interface with it. So you already know, like, oh, I need to hack that terminal, left bumper. Oh, I need to revive my teammate, left bumper. Oh, I need to, like, knock down, I need to splice that guy so that his shields drop, left bumper. So that frees you to do all the other tactical thinking and working with your partner that makes the fun part of co-oping work together better.
Yeah.
As opposed to, well, I don't know, like, you go over here and then I go to... And I don't know... I thought Brink was easy enough to understand that people would click to it better, but I guess they didn't.
Well, where Syndicate Co-op, at least the levels that we played, it felt more like Resistance 2 or it felt different than the single player in the sense that the single player felt like a very conventional FPS now, which is sort of a story moment where you're going through, you know, basically a corridor, going from one set piece moment to the next. Yeah. This felt more like an open area where they're just throwing tons of guys at you. And those guys increase in their difficulty, leading to a boss kind of situation. And it's pretty wide open, and you can kind of deal with it however you're going to deal with it. You know what I mean? It felt more like it was up to us to kind of create a plan.
Exactly. That's what I liked.
And it was great.
And there were multiple stages to the missions. You know, you would, so each mission had checkpoints along the way that you had to achieve, which I think also maybe that's another piece that doesn't work as well. Brink has very open maps where there's lots of different places that you can... Okay, so you guys could go tackle lowering this bridge right now, or you could go hack this terminal, or you could go over here and set up a gate defense.
Whereas but each of those is sort of a finger that you can go down and has a destination, and Syndicate didn't feel like that. It felt like just big open areas.
But there were specific things to do each time.
Yeah.
There was... Go get the hard, you know, go secure the building, okay? Go get the hard drives, bring the hard drives back to the helicopter, move on to the next stage. Or go to the garage, okay, get the data, move on from the garage, now go take out the general.
Yeah.
You know, so each piece was, here's a piece, move on, here's a piece, move on, here's a piece, move on. And so it felt like we had a very clear sense of progression of where we were going to the next thing and what we needed to be about at any time. And then you're right, I think the levels themselves encouraged open maneuvering and taking advantage of whatever we had at our disposal from weaponry to skills and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I liked it. I did too.
I didn't mean to imply that I didn't. The impression that I got before I played any of Syndicate was the single player is kind of substandard, but the co-op is where it's at. And I thought the single player was actually really fun. I really enjoyed the single player.
It's funny because contrasted to Binary Domain, I'm having more fun with Binary Domain simply because it doesn't take itself seriously, where Syndicate does take itself seriously.
Yeah.
And as someone pointed out, Syndicate is guilty of a lot of extended cutscene type, like here's a scene inside the game camera, but you don't have any control and you're just sitting there, you know, out of
I mean, it's control. It's not Deus Ex. It's not, I mean, there's games that do it what it does better than what it does. But I thought it was really fun. I mean, obviously, Deus Ex is more of a role-playing game, but I'm saying that
I will
milieu.
Here's the biggest compliment I can give a Syndicate co-op is I want to play more co-op.
Yeah.
I want to play more Syndicate co-op because it was really fun, and I thought the mission link was just right.
Although we did have several crashes and a difficult time starting it and all kinds of bugs, and we had a lock and we had a whole time finding each other and getting into games and all that stuff.
The problem was that we couldn't get in. So there's a bug evidently with party chat causing the game to lock up periodically. So we were trying to play the game together and use just in-game chat. But for some reason, we couldn't get the in-game chat to work. And we jumped out and we're like, oh, chat works fine. Party chat works fine. So then we started up the game with party chat. And we're like, okay, well, we'll just see how far we can go. And we got to the end of a second full mission before it froze. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But
problematic.
I don't understand why the team chat didn't work. The other thing is cool is that they have clan support in there, but they call it syndicates, which is kind of cool because it builds into the whole the theme of the game. I thought that was pretty fun.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot to like in the co-op there. I think it's going to get completely lost and forgotten if it's not already.
Well, yeah. I think it's crazy how fast the game was announced and released. Obviously, they had been working on it before that, but it was like, hey, here's this game, here's this trailer. Oh, new Syndicate. What?
But you don't like that? See, I like a game that – I like it when I don't know about a game, you know, 2 years before it comes out. I like this shorter – I would rather get excited about a game and have it in my hands in a reasonable amount of time.
I think I like splitting the two. I like the Apple approach where I know the iPad 3 is coming. And like there might be a leak, but then when it's kind of like, oh, what is it going to be with? And then they come out, whatever it is, like, hey, the iPad 3 is coming, buy it tomorrow. And you're like, oh my God, it's amazing. I like a little bit of a slow burn building me into it.
I think that might be what Half-Life 3 is going to be like.
That's too long of a slow burn.
But Apple doesn't game of the intend year. For, I mean, Apple keeps it secret till they ship it, basically, because they don't want anyone to copy them. There's leaks, but that's not, like the whole secondary thing. Maybe, I guess, if we didn't show a game or even announce a game until... I mean, they're thinking the iPad 2 is going to, 3 is going to come out a week after it gets announced
next
week.
There are game companies do intentional leaks also. And I'm not saying that Apple always does, but I think Apple has done some. And
it's not a leak then.
Well, no, but they want us to think it is. Like, oh, hey, oopsie, left this case design out at a bar. Oh, come on, Apple. It's buzz. It's buzz.
Mm-hmm. Not as crazy as some of the leaks we get in the games media business. This used to be a problem. I remember, of course, back when we had print magazines around Ziff, is the struggle you have with if you're a game publisher is you want to get on print magazines as well as online. And, of course, that means that you have to give the information to the print magazine well in advance mm-hmm. of when anyone else is going to see it. And then the real kicker, and we even would turn over the printing schedule to the publisher so they would know when your book was going to the publisher, is that there's this time – after which you've created the magazine and you've sent it over to the place that's going to print the magazines, that information is really hard to control. And once the magazine's been printed, it's pretty easy for someone who works at the printing facility to just sort of...
Well, that was Assassin's Creed 3 just happened. I mean, just happened, Game Informer
exactly.
cover.
That's why I was bringing that up. And
we had the same thing with Resistance 3. I mean, and that wasn't even the printer. We shipped that cover. We did a cover deal. We had Game Informer. We had a bunch of covers in Europe.
Awesome
and
cover.
And one of the... places in Europe, one of those houses, it probably wasn't the people working on the story, but someone who had access to our screenshot files dumped all the screenshots before the covers were even announced. And so all these new screenshots of the game, we hadn't come back, you know, set anyone up. And so Game Informer is like about to go to press and all their screenshots are online.
And they're livid.
Right. So fortunately we fixed it. We got a bunch of new screenshots, which is not easy, I might add, and got them new screenshots. So they had fresh screenshots when they shipped, but... you know, that can happen anytime you start giving assets to more than a few people.
Yep.
Good
so
Lord.
The other game this seems to have happened to is SimCity 5, which appears to be the big announcement at EA's Game Changers next week. I mean, of course,
very
there are
excited about this, though.
There were people who were already thinking that because it's a Maxis event and there's going to be some folks speaking there. The leak came through a GameStar German magazine. Not really surprising.
Europe. Yep.
Not really surprising.
9 out of 10 leaks fucking happen in Europe. Just
their laissez-faire attitude.
I don't know if it's laissez-faire or just, you know,
well,
if
their plumbing's been around longer.
Or, you never know. But it seems to me, at least.
Perception
in my
experience, is that
9 out of 10 leaks.
All right. So SimCity 5, rumored to have been in development at least a couple of times already and shut down because it wasn't going to get where they wanted it to. I'm thrilled. I mean, I love talking about sitting in the plane the other day. The other thing is every time I ride on a plane any place as we're going into land and you're like flying in low over cities, I look down and I'm like, green, 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 yellow, 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 green. Awesome. Oh, I could put a street right there. Yeah, it so kicks in, and I've been dying for a new SimCity. And I know I'm not alone. What do we want out of it, though?
Scalability. I would love to see some aspect of this game playable on my iPad, so when I'm on a plane, I don't need to be looking down. Then I can take over into my awesome PC version. I don't know if they're thinking that at all, but I would love some form of connectivity between all my devices that this game could run on. Hmm. That's my super wishful thinking.
That's kinda cool. Well, I could take that even a step further. That's inspired me to think, what if I'm playing SimCity and it's all running on some sort of cloud server for me and network, and I have my iPad in my hand that has all of my statistical stuff with whatever I'm working with on screen?
That'd be cool.
What about a more robust kind of multiplayer idea behind
it? That's my thought. Like, where's the social aspect?
I'm sure that'll be a big part of this, right?
Where are my friends' cities in the same state and, like, building highways between us?
Exactly.
And,
sharing
like,
resources.
Or maybe I'm focused on purifying all their water and they're focused on building all the power or something. And so, awesome. Or maybe I'm on the water and I can do stuff that they can't.
Oh, wow.
Trade
I have real trade.
Specialization.
Real trade network set up.
Wouldn't it be cool if you could build a really specialized city and then, of course, then you have to rely on other people. I don't know.
A city really is a multifaceted gem in the first place. So you might have something that you are able to trade with other cities, but, I mean...
Sure, but
there's
like
not
even,
such that we're not
going to
make a coal city.
But we really... In Southern California,
have you ever been to Kentucky?
But I'm saying...
We rely on water from other...
You know, a river city is different than an ocean city is different than a desert city that, like, Palm Springs, has a bunch of wind power. I don't know.
Right here in River City. It stands for pool.
I could not be more excited that SimCity's coming back. I think it's a franchise.
That also sets up travel. I'm sorry. Mind is clicking already. Like, transportation, shipping.
Well, and I think the other fun thing, too, if maybe you can't play the game on your iPad, maybe you can, but what if you had an iPad app where you could, like, walk around your city and, like, Google Street Map it so you could see.
Amazing! That's too much to hope for.
That would be awesome.
That's too much to hope for.
From the ground. Like, I mean, but it's not really, is it? Like, you think about, like, you know, they had, like, Sim Racer, Sim Copter, where you got to see a 3D version of your city. So why not bring that down and bring that to an iPad or something like that, or make it very Googly, where you feel like you're using Google Maps, or
and then awesome. Your Sims can move into your city, and you're in the new Sims. Everybody, okay.
But even if you can't necessarily play on your iPad, I think it'd be cool to have some way to take it with you. And if it's stats or just pinch to zoom, or you can, you know, just hop on Wi-Fi or 3G and update so it's real time, kind of always running. That desire to have you going back into that city and building.
Is it free to play? You think? Do you think that's my like?
Whoa.
Are they going to go the whole like free to play?
I'm guessing.
Do you guys
no.
think that SimCity is still a AAA franchise?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Amongst
PC gamers, I think it still is.
Do you think it's PC exclusive?
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I honestly have no fucking clue.
I think it's PC exclusive. Well, just the concept art that was leaked out of that looks really gobsmackingly awesome.
Yes.
So
it does.
I think that at least the lead platform or the core game experience platform will be a PC.
It still feels like a mouse driven game for the most part, though, or mouse or touch driven game. You never know with like Move or Kinect. Like, who the hell knows? But
what if your Simoleons could be like texting you and stuff? Telling you like how they like where they're living, what kind of new job they got.
Or even if you just had an iPhone app that was like status updates of your city.
Yeah.
So like maybe you're not playing the game, but you're like, oh shit,
sucks.
Like there's a tornado coming, or oh crap, like
that would
everyone's
be really
upset,
cool.
Or the sewage, there's not enough sewage, and I got to get on my game, and it gives you a notification. Yeah.
It's freaking awesome because you think about all the things that you use right now day to day in the way we've evolved social internet access through phones in real world, and all of them transfer into SimCity applications that you could play with in the same way. Mm-hmm. There could be like an analog to Yelp inside SimCity that was rating business. But follow me, rating, reviewing restaurants, reviewing businesses.
Ah,
services.
My sewage system just got a bad Yelp rating, guys, in my SimCity.
Exactly.
That's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
I just think this is really cool. Like, you pull up a business, and the business's Yelp rating would be in there, and there'd be then from the game mechanics side, you can start thinking about all of the pieces that might have factored into what got them their rating, and how many customers are coming there, and whether their customers are tuned in and doing those reviews. Like,
so would we still be excited if it's just a prettier SimCity?
Yes.
Yeah,
probably. I would.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's
there's a lot of potential, though. I mean, I think for me, the most exciting thing is the kind of thing James was talking about, where other people can now have access to my city and check it out and in ways maybe that
like Minecrafting? I mean, not like crafting. I'm being serious. Like Minecraft, where you can share your world with somebody or independent.
Yeah, or like connect our worlds to each other, or even
they
just...
did SimCity Online, and it was sort of
but it was a different era.
It was a different era.
The whole online, it was just kind of figuring out what online games
I'm
were.
I'm viewing
really.
This as even more of an asynchronous thing where it's just my friend list becomes part of my world and creates new supplies and demands and pressures on my city and how that interconnectedness all works. So even if you're not necessarily playing together, maybe you can just go look at their city. Maybe you could do something to help them
I think if I earn enough whatever, I can send a disaster to my buddy or something that he has to deal with. You know, that's awesome, right?
I think it's got to be async because this is the sort of game that when you want to sit down and play it till dawn, you want to sit down and play it till dawn. Right. And when you want to sit down and just come in and fool around with it for a little bit, you want to be able to do that. And so that's really the adapted model to async is then all the things that I'm doing are contributing to my network. And when my friends go and play, they'll see what I've been doing. At the same time, they don't have to be playing at the same time or investing the same amount of time one-to-one to where I am. Yeah, I think that I'm excited about it. Can't wait till next week. And other exciting things.
It's
going to
be a fun event next week, actually. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
There's that. There's another event right after it. There's Mass Effect 3 coming out. There's all kinds of people to see and talk to. There's
MotorStorm RC coming out.
MotorStorm RC on Vita.
And PS3, one low price for both games. I'm so excited.
And all the great independent games. I mean, that's really the wonderful thing about GDC is seeing
IGF next week.
The great, incredibly inspiring imagination that's on display from all the colleges that bring games there and all the IGF games and seeing, I mean, I've already gotten a bunch of stuff set up with seeing games that I didn't even know existed before this week. And that's what's so great about GDC. It opens, I mean, to a large extent, the conference has become a lot about sort of mini E3. And that happens like around the periphery.
Yeah, there's a push-pull happening.
All the hotels around, you go see all the big stuff. But the actual conference itself, I think, has a huge focus on really quality imagination and seeing what games are capable of. And I think it inspires even big developers and seeing all these young upstarts with their great ideas. I think it's really cool.
We will do our best to bring you everything we can from GDC next week. We have finally gotten things all set up with the very, very generous John Davison over at CBS Interactive GameSpot, who's going to be hosting the Weekend Confirmed studio remote for us again. So we'll be doing that next week. John will definitely be on the show, as will Jeff Cannata and I, and I'm working to get other folks on. I wish I had more to confirm right now, but I want to confirm something and not be able to make it happen. Gotta be able to make it happen. So that's the deal. Christian and James, of course, thanks for being on the show.
Yes, pleasure. Thank you. Always fun.
You know how we wrap it up, so it's time for finishing moves.
Finishing moves.
All right, so we can clear the air. I will start with mine. Last summer, right before E3 and all of the big judges shows, I saw one of these crazy big games that you're sort of trying to get a handle on what it is called End of Nations, which is Petroglyph, which is the Las Vegas-based team that's got a bunch of old CNC guys building an RTS. In this case, their idea was to build a massively multiplayer online real-time strategy game. And when we saw it last year, it looked cool, and it was just sort of this big, giant playground of units going all over the place, and it really didn't seem to be... We didn't know where it was going or what it was going to be. I got to play it a week ago, and the difference between last summer and where it is now as it gets ready to head into beta over the summer is dramatic. They've obviously been paying a lot of attention to games such as League of Legends and Dota because there's some of that like build in advance and take over space era and secure landing zone sort of deal to it. The big thing here is that the idea of it seems to have coalesced around the action real-time strategy that Massively used to make with Ground Control series. Fans of real-time strategy will know what I'm talking about, so don't worry about it. If you're tuning out, you're like, I don't know what you're talking about. Anyway, that good controls, good use of powers, and a tightly, but a reduced scope to where you know what you're doing with your team and how you're playing, and I think that they have a real chance to make a successful conversion of real-time strategy into a massively multiplayer online world. I'm really anxious now to play more End of Nations when it goes into beta over the summer. It's fun. It's cool. It's really good. It's clicking now.
That's good news.
It was interesting looking last summer and big, but it was like, what the hell is it going to be? Now they seem to have really gotten their design together around the tech that they had. So End of Nations, if you're a real-time strategy fan, I think you should be, you know, looking back into it and see what's up, getting to the beta signups. Who wants to go next?
I will dive in. I've tweeted about it. Jeff has talked about it. Saturday, March 24th at UCB in Los Angeles, which I realize might need some clarification. If you don't know, UCB stands for Upright Citizens Brigade Theater. It's not like a University of California school. Saturday, March 24th at 11:59 p.m., Jeff and I are co-hosting a show there called Double Jump, and it's a video game talk show of sorts for gamers.
Double Jump!
And the people that don't play them. If you're a gamer, there'll be some humor and stuff that you'll maybe get and appreciate more, but if not, it's still going to be a lot of fun. I would love so much to sell this show out, and if you are in the Southern California area, I encourage you to come. If you're not, tell your friends about it.
Travel!
We have some great guests lined up. Subject to change, but Dallas McLaughlin, who is a writer for the Aquabat Super Show, which is awesome. He was part of UCB's Jurassic Park the Musical.
Oh, God.
It's so funny.
There's one guest we probably shouldn't mention. The entire
crew of Mega 64, yes. Plus some other very special guests lined up, tentative, and we hope we can have this all happen. And it's $5. You can go right now if you just Google UCB LA. You can find the website, go to schedule. And what I want to do, I'm not quite sure of the logistics of it, but anyone out there, you have to buy your tickets online in advance, what I'd recommend doing. But when you walk into the box office, what I want to make happen, I will find a way to make this happen. Say weekend confirmed at the door, and the first 10 people that do that, I will have a stack of money there for them to give you your $5 back. So the first 10 people that come through and say weekend confirmed, I will find a way to pay for your ticket.
Nice.
To make that happen for listeners of this show.
Also back rubs. He's giving back rubs.
And back
rubs. And foot massages.
And free copies of Stanky Dick. I will not do the last part. And that song will be nowhere in this show. I encourage you to tell your friends and come out to this show.
Dude.
It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be awesome.
All right. I feel like an asset. I got to jump in just for 1 second for an extra finishing move. Holy shit. Jeff is an amazing fucking actor.
Oh, yeah.
By the way.
He's fantastic.
Dude, we went and saw James Stevenson, and I went and saw you in Dissonance last weekend. And if you're listening to this before it closes on Sunday and you're in LA, you should go. It's amazing.
Thanks, guys. It was really awesome that you came. And I was so touched by how many Weekend Confirmed fans showed up at the show.
Dude, you're a great actor.
Oh, thank
you. I got to say, like, I have not done acting critiques, so I will hope that this comes across as the compliment it's intended to be. I've known Jeff for a long while and count him as a very good friend. And he walked out on the stage in his role when he first takes the stage in his role. And I thought, that's Jeff Cannata. And almost immediately, I was like, I don't even know who this guy is.
Well, thank
you. He's Johnny. Holy shit, he's fucking Johnny. Who is this Johnny guy? He's kind of badass.
Clear, I do not fuck Johnny. Johnny on stage.
He is Johnny. He's not fucking a guy named Johnny.
Well, I mean, you weren't Jeff Cannata anymore. You were Johnny.
Thanks, man.
It was amazing.
That's really, really,
it was
really nice.
Really amazing. And it's a really interesting play. I found it really interesting.
It was a good play. And you stole my finishing move, but that's fine. I was going to say.
Oh, I thought you were doing something different. Sorry.
No. But I will tag on to that. I will say that I was stunned to learn that Jeff can sing.
I didn't play the guitar.
Anybody who's listened to this show for 2 years or knows that, Leahy's song came from me. So I don't know. No,
that's true.
I appreciate that. I don't consider myself.
He's blushing.
Singer.
Look, he's
also,
blushing.
There's these leather pants. There's
he's
these
blushing.
Leather pants too, ladies. Quality.
Oh yeah, the side lace pants.
Uh-huh, the side lace pants.
Side-lace
I hope
pants.
You're getting those after the show because
I was asking my girlfriend if I should.
She's just smiling over there. It's awesome.
They're pretty good, aren't they? Yeah. Ooh, that was a half-hearted. That was a
maybe,
half-hearted.
Maybe not. But I will say real quickly, Ticket to Ride Pocket.
Yes.
Just added asynchronous online multiplayer sports. You can play games with people online, and it's pretty fast and works really well. So if you're a big fan of that board game, they now actually have online
play. Are you playing it?
Yeah, I've been playing it.
I have it. I've been promising to play Jeff. I should
yeah, we should get a game going. My wife plays, too. You can actually do like a four-player game, too.
Yeah.
And it plays relatively fast enough. The only downside, of course, is that you have turns where people are just drawing. So that's not necessarily the most engaging online board game. But Ticket to Ride is such a good game, and it's only $1. Like, how could you not want to get into it a little bit?
Can't really beat that. Hey, this show was free. You got what you pay for.
Yeah. So my finishing move is something that, if you follow me on Twitter, at Jeff Cannata with 2 N's 1 T, you have already seen this because I tweeted it. I think it should be required listening for anyone that is on the internet. It's my new favorite thing. I did not create it. I merely was shown it on the internet, but I would love to share it with all of you with thanks to whoever made it, the person I do not know. But here you go.
It's okay to not like things. It's okay, but don't be a dick about it. It's okay to not like things. Don't be a dick about the things you don't like.
I would just say, wow!
I think that's something we can all, I certainly need to be reminded of that, and I think we can all be reminded of that from time to time.
So as you're typing your post right now, furiously, into that box on the forums, before you hit okay,
listen to that song again.
Listen to the song again. There you go, folks. That is your weekend confirmed. Hope you have a great one. We'll be back next week with a big GDC show. Until then, we are Ghost.
Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard that you know we play harder.
Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta feel she's ready.
This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.